declare the meeting open at 5:30 p.m. I welcome councillors, management, members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and is a significant meeting place for the Kulin Nation. Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that the meeting is being recorded and will be made available on the City of Melbourne website before close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of the meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should there be any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of the Council Business Team after the meeting. Could I ask that all mobile phones be turned off for the duration of the meeting? The agenda comprises 9 reports from management, 2 items of general business. We've received an apology from Councillor Oak. I advise members of the committee and the public where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than 6 members voting in favour, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest, as defined in the Local Government Act 1989, in relation to a matter to be considered by committee, please disclose the type and the nature of the interest prior to consideration of the item. Could I call on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of open meeting number 70 held on Tuesday the 10th of November 2015? Thank you, Councillor Pinder-Mortimer. Is that seconded? Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. I'll put that motion. All those in favour? That's unanimous. Thank you. Any matters arising from the minutes of the previous meeting? As at 3 p.m. today, the following submissions were received in accordance with the Council's conduct of meetings local law. In relation to agenda item 6.2, Planning Scheme Amendment C221 West Melbourne Waterfront, a request to speak from David Scalzo of Perry Projects, and items of correspondence from David Scalzo and Jeff Cox. In relation to agenda item 6.6, Ministerial Referral, Wesley Church Complex, 118148 Lonsdale Street, Melbourne, request to speak from Maureen Capp, Glenn Hunter, Brendan Rogers, Philip Rowe, Minister Alistair McRae, Chris Johansson and Tristan Davies, and items of correspondence from Christopher Lamb, Michael Kennedy, Glenn Hunter, Peter Barrett, Renata Lujau, Karen Dixon, David Harper, Greta Bird, Alison Parr, Robert Parry, Sophie Patterson, Yolandi Lenardi, Jeanette Large and Maureen Capp. In relation to agenda item 6.7, liquor referral, shop TG05, 31 Dukes Walk, South Wharf, an item of correspondence from Shane Harrison. In relation to agenda item 6.8, planning permit application 146 Direct Road West, South Yarra, request to speak from Tony Archibald, Simon Martin, Joanne Boyd, items of correspondence from Kerry McKendrick, John Brock, Michael Yates and Tony Archibald. In relation to agenda 6.9, discontinuance and sale of part of Block Place, Melbourne, request to speak from Mark Norton, G. Theodorou, John Mihalidis, Nick Servos and Travis Reed. Items of correspondence from Mark Norton, G. Theodorou, Nick Servos, Anu Kangru and Travis Reed. In relation to agenda 7.1, notice of motion from Councillor Lippert on South Kensington Station. Items of correspondence from Juan Munoz and Jeff Cox. Could I advise submitters that you have 3 minutes? Given the number of submitters, we will stick very strictly to that 3-minute time limit. A warning sounds behind us after 2 minutes, and at 3 minutes we ask you to conclude very promptly. In accordance with the Council Resolution the 26th of March 2013, we provide a period at the beginning and the end of the question for members of the public to ask questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration or address any agenda item before us tonight. This is not the time to make submissions. Anybody who'd like to ask us a question? Yes?
Tony Penner, Southbank Residents Group. A topic that's been an ongoing issue with Southbank that this council is well aware of is the Boyd Community Hub. I have a couple of questions around the same subject. Just recently in the latest Participate Melbourne newsletter, it states that the community consultation for the Boyd Park, which was due to be released in September of this year, has now been delayed till mid-2016. So my first question is on why have we got a 9-odd month delay on that draft concept plan? Secondly, in relation to the park that is coming, in my discussions with the developer, the developer's implied in those discussions that he's kind of not going to be dictated to by the City of Melbourne with regard to what that park is going to entail. He appeared to have had his own plans. In my own observation of the planning permit that was issued, I couldn't see anything that was locking him into what happens with that park. So was the consultation pointless, the community consultation, and what assurances do the residents have of this park concept that this consultation is meant to be producing if the developer's got his own plans?
In the first case, we can't comment on some third-party conversation you may or may not have had with the developer. I mean, we're not privy to that, so I can't make comment on that. Our arrangements are in place with the developer, Mackey. Our conversations, and I think we've been very patient as a council in dealing with that developer to get this developer, this development moving. In part, I have some sympathy for the developer with the removal of NRAS funding, which was in place when we put in place the requirement for affordable housing. So that has necessitated a more extended discussion with the developer about how it might be provided. But my understanding is that the open space is developed in consultation with the community and the council and not at the discretion of the developer.
So the delay on that report...
No, Tony. Thank you.
Well, that was my first question. Why was the delay on the report? We've done the community consultation already.
I think I've answered that as well.
Okay.
Any further questions? In that case, could I call on Councillor Ong to assume the role of chair in relation to the planning portfolio?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. There are 8 reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio tonight. First agenda item 6.1 is the Planning Scheme Amendment C259, which is an application of DDO 32 over 12262 Capel Street and 135 to 159 Peel Street. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item?
No.
In that case, I would call the councillor to move the motion. Councillor Leppard, move the motion. I'm happy to second this. Move, would like to speak.
Thank you, Chair. Just briefly, this is arising as an action in this year's annual plan. I thank the officers for bringing this to us. It results from an oversight in the application of the City North Structure Plan to the C196 Planning Scheme Amendment. That is going to be overcome now by this amendment, and I'm glad to see that that will happen. Unfortunately, we can't do it any faster than this because it does apply DDO 32 to an area of land with DDO 32's mandatory height provisions in it, and so the opportunity isn't available to us to choose a faster planning scheme application process than this one. However, we are addressing the gap here. We'll get to it as fast as we possibly can, and I thank officers for facilitating it.
I have nothing further to add to what Councillor Leppard said. Any other councillors like to speak to the motion? Any councillors speak against the motion? Not would the mover like to close? I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I declare the carried unanimously. Next agenda item 6.2, the Planning Scheme Amendment C221, the West Melbourne Waterfront. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No. In that case, I would call on David Scalzo of Perry Projects to address the committee. You have 3 minutes, David.
Turn that off. Thank you very much for hearing me here tonight. Just some key facts about the project. The West Melbourne Waterfront is expected to create 1,100 jobs and generate $1 billion in economic benefits for the state by 2022. The site is located close to 2 train stations, a network of bike paths and bus connections on Kensington Road. From a public transport point of view, keep it connected to the wider city, and it responds positively to the policy aspirations that have been expressed in Plan Melbourne and the City of Melbourne's municipal strategic statement. The current site conditions have poor public amenity and no access from Kensington Road to the Maribyrnong River. Our proposal seeks to open that site back up to the City of Melbourne residents and create a connected community from Footscray through to Kensington along the waterfront. The amendment before you tonight is the result of 3 years of extensive engagement with the City of Melbourne and government agencies. The key agencies we've been consulting and working with are the Department of State Development, Business and Innovation, the Port of Melbourne, Corporation, Melbourne Water, DTPLI and the Maribyrnong City Council. Currently, the surrounding area is subject to inundation in a major flood event, and our proposal will seek to bring this site and the adjacent road network out of the floodplain with some extensive flood mitigation works, making it a safer and more accessible environment. In terms of the key community benefits and the things that make it stand out from a normal urban renewal proposal, the community infrastructure and public space investment from us is in the region of $5 to $6 million for the local community and the waterfront. 30% of the site becomes converted to public realm, including an average setback of 25 metres from the riverfront. We have made commitments around putting a childcare centre on site, an artist-in-residence program including free exhibition space and commissioning of artworks for the project, and obviously an extensive public waterfront area with tree planting and new bike paths. We are committed to a diverse mix of accommodation types, minimum apartment sizes and design standards relating to natural light and ventilation. The building height has been located away from the river's edge and is focused on the central spine of the development. There's communal and private green spaces throughout, and through architectural diversity we're committed in developing very high quality buildings and making this an exemplar urban renewal project. We're very proud of the development plan. We think it's going to set a high benchmark for a new form of urban renewal. Our project team are happy to meet community members who may have key questions about the proposal, and we look forward to working with the City of Melbourne and achieving their goals under the City of Melbourne Homes for People strategy. Thank you.
David, I've got a question for you. Jisco, could you take the slides back a couple? No, forward. One more. Back front to the next one. No, the other way.
This one?
Next. Okay. The question I pose to you is that in terms of looking at your draft development proposal or development plan here and the way that the built form is proposed, in our officer's report which talks about pedestrian permeability, it talks about additional north-south through connections should be encouraged. Mm-hmm. Would you be supportive of a proposal that says basically that block, the first two blocks on the northern side, which are lengthy and huge, reasonably large blocks of residences, that there should be some true connection between one side to the other side? Because formerly, as an industrial building, I can understand the size of the whole block. But for residential, we normally would like to see a bit of a breakup. So what are your comments on incorporating true block links?
The proposal as it stands has been the result of a number of different moving parts from an urban design set of parameters that we've been working with the officers on. And although it looks fairly large and massy in the way it's proposed, obviously through architectural treatment and design, it's not going to be a sheer wall of anything. There's a range of different buildings. So we think that we can treat those architecturally to meet the aspirations and intent from design. If there were other through pedestrian links that worked, I mean, obviously that north side is the rail, so there isn't really very much or very far for people to go from there. It's a rail bund. But if there were other aspirations of it that the officers or anyone thought appropriate, we'd be happy to look at that as well. We made the key connection through to the waterfront. That's obviously the hero and the main pedestrian link through for everybody, and connection is a central area.
Yeah, I understand that. Bearing in mind that just across the railway line, the structure of the residential in the Kensington Banks area and the true links, true block links, breaks up the built form in that area. And mm-hmm. We're trying to look at that maintenance, and that's why on page 17 of the report, or page 6 of the actual document, says...
Council, this is a time for questions, not for...
So I guess the question is, you're not averse to the idea of putting those in?
No, we're not.
Okay, good, that's fine. Just wanted to ask that. You may take your seat. On that note, I would like to move a recommendation which is slightly changed from what was in the actual published document. I'll call a second for that, Councillor Leppard.
One second, Councillor. I mean, You've just had an assurance from the developer that they will have a look at what we need to do, and I think that is reasonable given the work that they have done. That mandates things which may or may not be in line with what our officers have recommended to them. Because it mandates two pedestrian links north-south. I think that normally what we do is take the word of the developer, they'll continue to work with our officers. We don't then say we're going to mandate it on top of what they have said.
Actually, in some respect, you are correct there. I think that's why I thought I asked the question first rather than put it up as and considered an ambush sort of change to this thing, because it's important to make sure that the developer and the proponent is supportive of such a concept.
If you put, Councillor, subject to consideration of the inclusion of additional north-south pedestrian links, we can take advice from our officers.
Subject to consideration, I'm happy to make the change. Consideration of the inclusion.
That's fine. That's in line with what the developer
said. Okay, I'm happy. Would a seconder happy with that?
I think so. Can I just ask one quick question of officers while we've got the opportunity before
sure.
the debate, Chair, and thank you for that. Is that the best language going forward, or is there something else that we'd like to suggest for inclusion in the DPO?
I think that we can work with this language. It identifies what we're trying to achieve, which is that north-south objective. I think particularly picking up on Mr. Scalzo's point, the pedestrian link through to the actual railway corridor doesn't provide a particular enhancement of pedestrian connectivity. So I think this wording actually allows us to work with the developer to actually say exactly where should additional links be considered and included.
Thank you. On that note, seconded by Councillor Leppard. I'm not going to say too much on it. The report, I thank both the proponent and the officers for spending time putting this together. And the wording, as I mentioned before, it's about encouraging this development of an area which has been sort of neglected for a long time, and it is a welcome change to the area. And I think looking at the overall development proposal, it will be exciting to make that part of the City of Melbourne's boundary along that Maribyrnong River to become a lot more active. Because on the other side of the river, there's some similar developments going on in the City of Maribyrnong, in that area near Joseph Street. So I think that whole part of the Maribyrnong River will become a lot more attractive with this development, and all the conditions in there to include about flood mitigation and so forth, and making sure that it's set back enough from the river. I think it ticks most of the boxes. As I've said, the size of the blocks is something that I have some concern of, but which has been mentioned in the report. So I'm happy with this additional change to the actual recommendations. I'll leave it at that, and I'm supportive of this change, of this proposal. Councillor Leppard?
Thank you, Chair. I agree, and thank you, David, and to Leanne and her staff for what looks, what at least appears to be from this end, a very, very collaborative process between government and the developer. And I think it's testament to staff on both sides. Our MSS, of course, identifies the site as potential urban renewal, and I agree with the mover that this is a site that's very suitable for urban renewal. There's a lot of really positive components of this scheme, including the public open space that we'd like to vest back into the public. Affordable housing, and I think this is the first application of development bonuses since the adoption of our housing strategy at the end of last year, so it's fantastic to see that housing strategy being enacted now, and a whole lot of other things which, of course, David's rattled off, so I won't list them again here. I think the through block links addition is a good one, and if we can work to break up some of those larger blocks, that will be an even greater addition again. But, of course, from here, the statutory process only just begins, and I look forward to seeing what the community feedback is going to be. There's already been a quite significant submission filed today from the Kensington Association, and if David hasn't seen it yet, then it'll be online in the morning, so I urge you to have a look at it there. But, yes, we'll consider all that feedback when it comes to the next stage.
Thank you. Councillor Lepper. Any further speakers to the motion? Speakers against the motion? None. I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I declare it carried unanimously. Next agenda items, which is 6.3, which is Amendment C257. I will just wait for the changeover. There's a few more seats in the back. You just got to come into the front. Come around the front and then go into the middle. Any further people wanting to leave yet? If not, I'll start to the next one. Great. C257. Okay, Melbourne University South Bank Campus Advertising Sign Controls. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No? If that's the case, I'm happy to move what's been put up as a recommendation. I call the councillor second that motion. Councillor Leppard. Pretty straightforward. I think the officers have worked this through with Melbourne University, and we've had lengthy discussions to look at this and what is acceptable on the south side towards Grant Street, which is the interface to the residential area, which is protected by this particular amendment. And the main signage changes that is proposed, mainly for identification of the arts precinct, the Victorian College of the Arts, from the current setup to what is more appropriate for its use going forward, I'm supportive of this. I have no major issue with it. Councillor Leppard? Any further comment on this? Nope. I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I declare the carried unanimously. Next agenda item, which is a ministerial referral. TPM 2014-9/A, amended Batman Hill Development Plan for 614-666 Flinders Street, Docklands. Councillors, like a presentation on this agenda item? No. I'm happy to move the recommendation that's up on the screen. I call the councillor to second the motion.
Happy to again if no one else does, Chair, but can I just suggest that we change Melbourne City Council to City of Melbourne? We are not the council. Thanks.
Okay. Melbourne City Council, City of Melbourne. That's fine.
You okay with that?
I'm quite sure we are both of them. Okay. Right. This is an amendment to what was brought to us back in 2014, I would say, in terms of what the proposed site's going to look like in terms of the type of towers, the residential and the commercial towers. Since then, the proponent has looked at what's they're required and also some discussions on what's a proposed better outcome from the point of open space, the use of buildings, the size of the buildings. And they've come back with this proposed change to the permit. I won't go through all the details of the report. There are some concerns that are raised in terms of the building C1, in terms of how it treats C1 and C3, treating of Aurora Lane, and the officers have put some comments on that, and that's clearly seen in the next application in terms of C1, in terms of setbacks required in those buildings. The two connections have been defined a bit better, and the Sky Park, well, it's an interesting development as part of this, opens up the space. It's meant to be for use by the public, and I hope that the developer will make sure that it's open to the public as much as possible, rather than what is stated, the possibility of not being open to the public when there are functions going on. So I'd like to see more open to the public rather than less. Other than that, I'm happy to proceed with what the officers have recommended in terms of the changes. Councillor Leppert, nothing else? Any other councillors like to add to this? Yes, Lord Mayor.
I'll just say one brief thing, and that is that although officers have proposed conditions, and I'm happy to support the recommendation, this is a very difficult site, and we're dealing with people who have considerable experience in, you know, Denton, Corker, Marshall, Lendlease and Places Victoria, who to be honest are usually our hand-in-glove partners. Part of their difficulty has been created by Wurundjeri Way. You know, we know that there's a dividing arterial between the city and Docklands, and so while conditions have been imposed, this is a further attempt to overcome the artificiality of Wurundjeri Way and this difficult site in Collins Street in order to try to knit together the city and Docklands. So while we have suggested some conditions, it is nevertheless, I think, a very valiant attempt to overcome an extremely difficult site.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Just to quickly close, I agree with what Lord Mayor say. If you used to walk across Collins Street, past the age, the media house, and you look left, there's this big empty space there, which used to be a car park for the old casino, and it's got Bunjil there. And then you get to the old Goodshed South. And I think this development, done according to the plan and done properly with good build form, will fill that missing gap in the entire stretch of Collins Street west of Spencer. And I'm looking forward. This is not a development that's going to happen overnight. It'll take a number of years, but at the end of it, it will fill that part that's missing, I think, in the development, ongoing development of Docklands along Collins Street. On that note, I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I declare it carried unanimously. Next item is agenda item 6.5, which is TPM 2015-16, the commercial building known as C1 at 2-24 Aurora Lane, Docklands. Would councillors like a presentation on this particular item? No. On that note, I'm happy to move the recommendation that's up on the screen. I call the councillor to second that. Lord Mayor, thank you. This is the detailed part of the previous one, and we're looking at the first building in that whole area, which is known as Melbourne Quarter. And C1, in terms of what it's trying to achieve as a commercial building along the Collins Street front, I think it's a good outcome. Officers have put some conditions in, and especially in the area of how it's treatment of Aurora Lane, which runs north-south on the west side, in terms of the sheer wall there. So the setback requirements there, I think, will make it a bit better, and I hope that the applicant will be able to make that happen in terms of what we are requesting them to do. The true connection through Market Lane, the marketplace, the new Sky Gardens and all that coming in, I think they are all great when we see C2 comes into fruition after C1's completed, and then we'll see a much better frontage on that part of Collins Street. So, as I said before, we're looking towards this completion of this particular area, which currently is a poorly used or unused space. Lord Mayor? Nope. Any other speakers against the motion? For the motion? Councillor Wood.
Just very quickly, I know this point's been made, but just to emphasise that this more specific application The condition notes very strongly the access to the Sky Garden from Collins Street, and I think that that's a really key part of this, that open space is only going to be a much-loved public open space that's very accessible with that accessibility from Collins Street, and with that I think that's a really good condition recommended by our officers.
Thank you. I'll put this to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I declare it carried unanimously. Next agenda item is 6.6, the ministerial referral TPM 2015-4, the Wesley Church Complex at 118-148 Lonsdale Street, Melbourne. Would officers like a presentation on this agenda item? Councillor Wood, yes. I call on Jane Birmingham, a practice leader on statutory planning, to make a brief presentation.
Okay, this is a ministerial referral for Council to consider tonight. You can see the site there on Lonsdale Street. It's currently occupied by the Wesley Church complex. That's just an aerial view showing the Regency Tower in that location there, the residential building directly adjoining the site. On this plan, you can see the buildings that are proposed to be demolished. Those include the Princess Mary Club, the buildings in the northeast corner, which don't have a lot of heritage value, but importantly, the caretaker's cottage, the schoolhouse, Nicholas Hall, and the church are proposed to be retained. It's worth noting that Heritage Victoria has already issued a Heritage Victoria permit for the demolition of those buildings and the redevelopment of the site as proposed. This is the ground floor plan. Important features of this development are 55,000 square metres of office space within a 39-storey tower. There's 1,373 square metres of retail space throughout the ground level, a loading bay accessed off Jones Lane, 117 car spaces and 368 bike spaces, and a key feature is the retention of the significant olive tree here and the creation of an accessible public space in the northern section of the site adjacent to Little Lonsdale Street. This is essentially the tower plate. It's built 2 metres setback from Jones Lane, and there's in order of a 10-metre separation to the Regency Tower building. The lift core has been aligned with the balconies at Regency Tower. There's a minimum setback from Little Lonsdale Street of 2.5 metres and from Lonsdale Street of 4.5 metres. These are just the elevation views of the tower. Looking through those. The podium sits at a height of around about 25 metres, which responds in some ways to the base of the spire. The Heritage Victoria approval actually requires more of a cutaway of the building in this location to allow more direct views across Lonsdale Street to the spire of the church. The height of the building is proposed to be 148 metres, and that's similar to the height of the Wardle building at the QV Centre, which is in the order of 147 metres. So again, this just shows the building in context. You have the Regency Tower here, the Telstra building further up Lonsdale Street, and the proposed tower here at 39 levels. These are some renders, and these reflect further work that's been done by the applicant following the Heritage Victoria permit to respond to some of the conditions, as I noted, primarily around this Lonsdale Street interface and the relationship with the church building there. this is the view from Little Lonsdale Street, and here's the key publicly accessible space to be created on the northern side of the site. This image in the lower corner shows the degree of permeability through the site, and that's really one of the key features of the redevelopment. And that's the end of the presentation.
Thank you, Jean. Councillor Leppert, you have a question?
Thanks, Jane. We've received lots of submissions on this item urging us to refuse or advise the minister that he refuse on the grounds of demolition to the Princess Mary Club. Mm-hmm. Can we just clear this up from the first bit, and can you tell me if my understanding is correct? Clause 4301, which is of course the heritage overlay, subsection 2, says that no permit is required to demolish those buildings, and that is because the buildings are on the State Heritage Register and Heritage Victoria has already made a determination. By extension, does that mean that the responsible authority, and by extension us advising the responsible authority, cannot canvass issues of the demolition of a heritage building in our response?
That's correct. So the heritage overlay specifies that where a property is on the Victorian Heritage Register, there's no permit trigger under the heritage overlay. So in this case, there's no planning permit required either for demolition or for the redevelopment of the site pursuant to the heritage overlay. So both council and the minister will be bound by that. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Councillor Watt, you have a question for Jane.
I have a number of questions, by way of, if you could just clarify for me. Yeah. On the matter, I note in the delegate's report and discussions during the day, could you explain to us all the situation in relation to the wind report?
Mm-hmm. I just need to... Thank you. So in relation to wind, MEL consultants have prepared a wind assessment, and that confirms that the northern open space or plaza area would achieve the criterion for long-term stationary activities for all wind directions. It also demonstrates that the design provides for substantial areas of the public realm, achieving conditions suitable for long-term stationary activities. Wind mitigation measures are proposed, and the nature of those devices involve a series of screens in the plaza zone, nominally at a height of 1.5 metres, and the exact location of those screens would be resolved through the design detail process. In relation to the olive tree, there will also officers are recommending a condition that there be further wind assessment done to ensure that the tree is not affected through the development.
Thank you. Another question that's come to me today is in relation to visitor parking, the absence of that. Could you explain our council's position on this?
Pursuant to the planning scheme, visitor parking is really generally referred to as part of residential developments where there'll be a resident parking provision and a visitor parking provision. The scheme, given that this is entirely commercial, the references through the applicant's material to visitors probably relate to office workers or visitors to the office complex on the site.
Thank you. Just another, if I may. It seems I'm confused about the way this open space is to be handled. You refer to it as public open space, but it's my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, that it's not actually in the public realm. It remains to be managed by the owners of the land.
Yes, that's correct. It's an open space that will have a great aspect and create permeability through the site, but it wouldn't be owned or maintained by the City of Melbourne. It will be something that remains in private ownership, but it's quite clear that the intent of the development is to ensure that that space draws people into the site and allows permeability through. On top of that, at the subdivision stage, we would also be in a position to ask for a public open space contribution in addition to that publicly accessible space on the northern side of the development.
There's just one more matter that I'm concerned about, is that people are alleging that Jones Lane is going to be degraded. is that going to be, I mean, is this what we're facing?
Councillor, I walked down Jones Lane today and the officer's assessment is that this development would actually improve that space. The development's contained entirely within the tidal boundaries. Jones Lane is currently a shared zone and it varies from 5.2 to 6.6 metres. And my understanding is that the ability for it to remain as a shared zone will continue. That space will be activated. There will be activity and retail use along Jones Lane. So I would see that that area would actually be improved.
Right. Well, there's just one more thing. No, I just have one more matter, if you don't mind. The business about the setbacks, could you explain to everybody the difference between, because it seems inconsistent in the report, the 10 metres and the 5 point something. Okay. How's that happening?
All right. This application was lodged with the Minister prior to the introduction of C262 on the 4th of September, so we must consider the application in the context of the design policy, Urban Design Policy 2201, as it existed at that time. That policy recommends a setback in the order of 10 metres for towers from the street. That policy has never actually come to fruition. There are numerous examples of buildings that have a lesser setback to the street. And in fact, the post C262 urban design policy actually requires a 5 metre minimum setback from streets. So officers are of the view that a minimum 5 metre setback will be required from Little Lonsdale Street and Lonsdale Street to ensure that the bulk of the proposal responds appropriately to the street levels.
Thank you for your patience in answering those detailed questions.
Thank you, Jane. And now I'd like to move on to the speakers who have requested to address the committee tonight. You all have 3 minutes, as the Lord Mayor have said before. So I first call on Maureen Capp, OAM, to address the committee.
Sorry, before I start, I believe Sophie Patterson's name was not included on the list of speakers, but it is agreed that she should speak. Okay. Okay. My name is Maureen Capp and I chair the Wesley Historic Precinct Action Group. Where do I start? My daughter's advice was to speak from the heart. Well, my heart is full of fury. If this agenda item is passed and the building as proposed therein is built, that building will stand as a monument to planning madness. It's an overdevelopment. It's a gross overdevelopment. What is the key issue? The key issue is this site is in Lonsdale Street and it's a premier site in Melbourne and should be given premier treatment. Instead, what is proposed? The officers in the planning department have stretched the planning scheme to its absolute limits to attempt to have you approve the building. In so doing, the intrinsic heritage value of the site is destroyed. The building which is proposed fails on every measurement of the city's building policies. I'm talking about podium height, separation of towers, setbacks, bulk and scale, and amenity. In shorthand, 35 to 40 metres becomes 23 metres. 25 metres becomes 10 metres. 10 metres becomes 2.5 metres. Bulk and scale aren't discussed and amenity doesn't get a mention. What is the proposed treatment for this premier site? Planning officers have made recommendations for the approval. Well, let us look at the recommendations against the proposal. In 2011, the then Minister for Planning refused a building permit for a building hugely smaller in scale and bulk. You all know about that. Secondly, in February this year, Council Planning Officers advised Heritage Victoria that they did not support the granting of the heritage permit. Thirdly, Council's own internationally applauded urban design team's first position is that it has recommended against the proposal. And fourthly, a huge number of local community groups and residents oppose the development for the very reasons I am raising here. In general terms, if approved, what will happen to this premier site? a heritage. The historic overlay of Little Lonsdale Street, or Little Lon as it's affectionately known, is to be trashed. Princess Mary Club is to be trashed, and the historic integrity of the whole Wesley site also will be trashed. To Jones Lane, a Category 2 lane, if this building is built, Jones Lane will then fail on the criteria of meeting 3 of 4 values it will need to remain at Category 2. To amenity, the proposal ignores and denies amenity to its neighbours, overlooking, supposedly minimised, is significant, access to light and air is denied. To orderly use of the site, such a gross overdevelopment destroys any valuable contribution such a project can make to the City of Melbourne. In closing, do you know that this east end of town of the CBD is seriously in danger of becoming a second-class area of town? As councillors, you now have to have your say, remembering that your own urban design team does not approve the building. Can you say you've read the report and, having understood it, find that it supports the notion of a premier building for a premier site and argues well for acceptance? I can't, and ask you to see it the same way.
Thank you. Maureen, I next call Glenn Hunter to address the committee. Glenn, you have 3 minutes.
Dear councillors, I am the chairman of the Owners Corporation of Regency Towers, an apartment building that comprises 222 homes located immediately to the east of the Wesley Church site, our neighbours. It is the building that is virtually invisible in most of the glossy pictures provided by the developer. In 2011, the Minister of Planning refused to grant a permit to build a 20-storey office building on the eastern side of the Wesley site. The first reason for the refusal was the proposal results in the loss of residential amenity to the properties to the east of Jones Lane beyond that which could reasonably be expected in the city. That decision was in accordance with the objectives under the Melbourne Planning Scheme, and no doubt was part of the government's intention to make Melbourne livable for ordinary residents. The residents of Regency Tower were relieved with that decision, as it displayed the council's and government's determination to protect the rights of ordinary citizens from harsh, overbearing development. You can imagine the residents' disappointment when they learn that despite the decision made in 2011, another office building was being proposed, but this time nearly twice as big as the previous. This was despite the fact that the laws and objectives under the Melbourne Planning Scheme have not materially changed since that decision. When reading the report prepared by council officers recommending the development to proceed, it is concerning to note that under key issues, the primary reason for previous refusal, reason one, loss of residential amenity, has made light and not even directly referred to. Indeed, the conclusion is that the visibility of the tower walls to Longsdale and Little Longsdale Street is the primary concern and not the proposed height of the building. It does not make sense that with the mere increase of a 2 metre setback along Jones Lane from the previous proposal, the current proposal, which is nearly twice the height, now meets the requirements under Clause 21.07, Objective 3, to ensure the amenity of existing residential uses is protected. In effect, a wall in excess of 148 metres, 39 levels high, and engulfing the entire western side of the Regency Towers and beyond, depriving many homes now of any direct sunlight, casting many homes in near permanent shadow, and verging on near darkness in the winter months for lower level apartments, apparently from the council officer's consideration, ensures that the reasonable expectations of amenity for existing residential users are maintained. I would ask of the members of this committee to think logically that if the earlier, much smaller development did not, how this building, which is a massive overdevelopment for the site, possibly satisfies the requirements under the Melbourne Planning Scheme now. Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn. I next call Brendan Rogers from Urbis to address the committee. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Councillor. My name is Brendan Rogers. I'm a director of Urbis. I've been responsible for the guiding the planning application from the proponent side. We have a brief presentation here, which I'll speak to, and also Philip Rowe, who will follow me, will also speak to. Photograph of the site as it stands today. The Uniting Church, some time ago, almost over 2 years ago now, looked for a development partner to assist it with opening up the site to the community and unlocking the potential of the site, and also importantly...
Excuse me, may I ask members of the audience to please allow the speaker to speak? You can't hear.
I'll speak up. So to open up the site to the community and to unlock the potential, and also to restore and preserve the important heritage buildings, which are very important to the church. It partnered with Leighton Properties in regard to a 125-year leasehold to redevelop the site, and also to put in place an innovative approach to protect the heritage in the form of a sinking fund that would provide ongoing funds to restore and preserve the heritage elements of the building. At the moment, the site is not inviting in any way, shape or form. The heritage quality of the building is hidden away, and it's not in a great state of repair. We've worked with council officers, the department and also Heritage Victoria over the last 12 months in detail. Applications were lodged with both Heritage Victoria and the Department of Planning in conjunction with Melbourne City Council in about mid-January this year. We've had numerous meetings and workshops with all parts of council in regard to urban design and open space, Rob Adams and his team, with the planners and the urban designers to work through the proposal and take on board the feedback and work through this to achieve outcomes for the site. And the three key elements have been a new public open space for the site in the location identified by council strategy, an important heritage, preserving the heritage, and a new workplace for Melbourne in what is an office precinct of the city. And that includes a new home for the Uniting Church and for the Wesley Mission on the site. So there's been some great outcomes in regard to this work. As was mentioned earlier, a heritage permit was issued on the 10th of November this year. That followed a detailed analysis and it looked at the ability to preserve buildings, including the Princess Mary Club. A detailed analysis was submitted to Heritage Victoria. They did their own independent audit on that, which came to the view that the Princess Mary Club, it was not viable to retain that building. And that was part of the considerations by Heritage Victoria in approving that demolition. We have been very pleased with the work we've been able to do with Council's officers, and we are pleased to see a positive recommendation from the office in relation to this. Now, I'll now hand over to the next speaker.
Yes. Could you just... Councillor Leppard has a question for you.
Thank you for that. Our officers are recommend... You've just said that you're happy with the officers' recommendation here. Part of the recommendation, of course, is setbacks from Lonsdale and Little Lonsdale of 5 metres. Yes. Am I taking that you fully support that condition?
Yes, we're looking to work with the council, and there's obviously design development that will need to be done in regard to that, and we're looking forward to working with the officers to achieve that.
Councillor Watts, you have a question?
Yes, it just occurs to me in listening to you, you clearly recognise the heritage element that is not going to be retained. Are you making any attempt to mark this site in any way?
Yes, there are detailed requirements under the heritage approval to record photographic recognition of it, also interviews trying to locate previous residents to take interviews from them. So there's a detailed requirement under the heritage approval to make sure that heritage is recorded.
Site, and on the site itself?
I don't recall the detail of that, but there may be, but I don't recall that's one of the conditions but there is definitely requirements to record the heritage of that building.
Yep, and it's quite clear in the conditions that you have to do that.
Yes.
Thank you. You may take your seat, and I'll call Philip Rowe from Cox Architecture to address the committee.
Thank you, Councillor. Well, just to reiterate three key points that we were focusing on, working with UCA, the church particularly, the idea of the public open space was really the key. The idea of creating meeting place was a key agenda for them, a key objective. Item two, in terms of preserving the heritage, the situation at the moment in terms of the quality of that the existing heritage is not in good condition. So what happens with this situation is there's a fund that will last for 125 years to keep this heritage in best condition moving forward, which is a very important component. Item two, and item three is really creating, I think, a home in some way for Wesley to come back to and also the broader workplace within this area, which is needed. Starting again in terms of dealing with the UCA, their real aim for this area was to create a meeting place for the public and for Melbourne. Part of the issue at the moment in terms of the church is they're losing people, and for the church what they want to do is bring the city in. So our first conversation was about that focus on that. And also I think in terms of the City of Melbourne. Now there's about four particular open spaces within the City of Melbourne that we focus on. I think one particularly on 446, which has just been approved. There is obviously Fed Square. The items are in front of the town, adjacent to the town hall, and adjacent to the library, particularly. But really, this becomes a fifth great public open space, I think, for the city. So it's very important. They're very hard to get, and we think in terms of this as an attribute for the city is very important. Just moving forward in terms of the building itself, Lonsdale Street to the south, the idea of a meeting and events space at the front. The items in the centre there, the idea of sanctuary, very important to get spaces of sanctuary in the city, and it is very rare. That idea of meeting within a sanctuary space is key. But really to the back, that idea of the city meeting place facing north with the retention of the olive tree particularly is very important, and achieving 9% open space. The idea of the public realm, there is over 50% of that space given back to the public realm. Very important in public realm is connectivity and activity to make it successful, which we have achieved, and really creating a new space for our city. Heritage, as we know, really three major components and the trees themselves being retained and designing to that space, opening the aperture to the church itself and to the manse, and on the right-hand side, that inflection which allows for greater separation to the church. So really balancing the objectives, heritage, open space and a great new workplace for this end of the city, very important. Give you an indication of some of the design outcomes, activity on Jones Lane and to the Lonsdale and the workplace itself. Really a key point of this, a sculptural form within the city skyline, but then also a home for Wesley.
Thank you, Philip. Any questions for the speaker? Councillor Foster.
Thanks very much for your presentation. You mentioned the deterioration of some of the buildings. Who was responsible for the deterioration?
Who was responsible for the deterioration?
Who was responsible for their upkeep?
Well, ultimately the church is the owner of the land.
Thank you, Philip. Let me take a seat. Next, I call on Minister Alistair McRae from the Uniting Church to address the committee. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Councillor Ong. Councillors, I simply want to convey to the Council the enthusiastic and unanimous support of the Wesley Church Council for this development. We've been part of the development of the project from the very beginning. And I don't want to be repetitive, but to make three key points. I'm a preacher, so I've got to make 3 points. Our main enthusiasm, obviously, is because the project will ensure the complete restoration of this iconic Melbourne church and its preservation for 125 years. That is of most significance to us, but also, of course, the preservation and restoration of the old manse, the caretaker's cottage and the old schoolhouse. Currently, there's about $5 million of deferred maintenance on the church, and I guess a negative incentive for us is that if this project does not go ahead, we are in grave risk of having to close the doors of that church within the foreseeable future, and that would be a tragedy for Melbourne. The public amenity is the other driver for us. We lament that currently the site is inhospitable. It's a dusty car park, and the prospect of creating green space for social gatherings, for contemplation, for performance, is very attractive to us. So they're the main points: the consolidation of the Uniting Church administration, the massive network of community services through Wesley Mission with the three congregations that meet in Wesley Church is also very attractive to consolidate the various dimensions of the church's life from this site. So, we love the project and dearly hope that you will support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. No questions for that? Okay. Next, I call Chris Johansson from Leighton Properties to address the committee.
Good evening, councillors. Thanks for the opportunity to talk about this exciting project. We've worked in close conjunction with your offices as well as from the Department of Planning at a state level and Heritage Victoria. There's no question that the outcome for this very important site has to be a balanced one. We've worked with the people from your landscaping division, and we think that the key benefits that a development can bring to the project are, as Phil has already mentioned, the open space. The only way, as Alistair mentioned, that the church can afford to retain these projects is by way of a contribution from a development such as this. There's also, by doing this project and incorporating the Heritage Victoria conditions, there's 125-year certainty for the ongoing maintenance of these important heritage buildings. Just to respond to the question that the councillor raised earlier, one of the conditions of Heritage Victoria is in fact that a number of key aspects from the history are responded to and demonstrated to be in the public realm. So we need to engage the appropriate experts to incorporate that in conjunction with the landscape design, which will be an ongoing exercise in conjunction with Heritage Victoria and the Melbourne City Council. We'd encourage you to agree with us and Heritage Victoria that it's a terrific outcome for the project, and we look forward to your support. Thank you.
Any questions for the speaker? No, thank you, Chris. You may take your seat. Next, I call Tristan Davis on behalf of Melbourne Heritage Action to address the committee. Tristan, you have 3 minutes.
Thanks. Bear with me with the slideshow. So, next slide. Or do I do that? The next slide, please. Oh, right. Apologies. It's always different. Thanks for that. Sorry about that. So obviously we have, you know, concerns with Heritage Victoria's decision. Obviously we don't know any of the reasons for it. It does involve, you know, significant demolition of a number of buildings. So we can't exactly say that this is a great heritage outcome despite, you know, some funds for the church, which may, you know, been able to reach with other ways. So although, you know, the Heritage of Victoria permit extinguishes City of Melbourne's official capacity to complain on heritage grounds, we still feel that council is free to express dissatisfaction with some elements of how the heritage is treated on the site. Most of the council's own submissions to Heritage Victoria were not met in the final decision, so that's worth noting. And we don't know the reasons, obviously, for the permit and can't appeal, so it's a bit of a moot point, unfortunately. They consider this according to their own act, but don't actually consider heritage policies like the City of Melbourne's policies on maintaining visual prominence of heritage buildings and landmarks, which is most obviously to the detriment of the Mance building there, which has, you know, been buried within the tower. Also that towers should have a podium that provides context to heritage, which arguably this building doesn't so much have a podium as an undercroft. We assume the main justification for the Heritage Victoria permit is the restoration of the church and other heritage buildings. However, previous designs did much the same with far less floor area, so a tower with greater setbacks could still be provided, and we're not sure what's changed in the few years since there. We also note that Council's own heritage policy says that towers should be set back at least 10 metres from street frontages, which I don't believe is happening on all fronts here. We therefore suggest that Council should object to this permit on urban design grounds in that sense. And just quickly, a member of our group provided some sketches, alternative sketches of how heritage might be maintained. For instance, if obviously the Princess Mary Club has structural issues, but we can't see why facades can't be maintained as part of a development here. If the Mary Club can't be retained at all, of course, there's always the option of moving the manse so it's in a more appropriate area and it's not dominated by the tower. And I'll just quickly... You got the photo there of the Princess Mary Club before it was allowed to deteriorate, and it's a real shame that's come to this. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Tristan. Any questions for the speaker? Next, I call the final speaker, Sophie Patterson, to address the committee. Sophie, you have 3 minutes.
My name is Sophie Patterson, and I represent my great-grandfather, Alfred Nicholas, who was one of the principal benefactors of the historic buildings on this site, namely the Princess Mary Building, the Wesley Church and Nicholas Hall, after the church was donated the land by council. Alfred was a strict Methodist whose goal in life was to help others, and in this case, the women of Victoria. He took out bank loans to do so and ended up giving away over half of his estate for social purpose. Women in the 1920s were suffering from social inequalities, the Depression and unemployment. The purpose of the Princess Mary Club was for the use by the community as a home for women who would otherwise have been destitute and to give them an opportunity in life. The purpose of the gift was given in good faith that the church would use it for social well-being and to help those in need. Such was Alfred's mission in life. Heritage Victoria have claimed that the Princess Mary Building has no purpose as a women's accommodation centre. I beg to differ. It has more purpose today than ever. Today we know that there is a strong demand for women's accommodation in the city, and the commitment of the Women's Property Initiative to develop this property for women seeking refuge is just one avenue that could be taken. In fact, they have a 6-month waiting list for accommodation. Many of these hostels of this type also closed in the 90s, and today there is minimal competition. Women's issues are rife in the community, and the Princess Mary Club has every purpose today as it did then. It must remain for the purpose of helping women. There's 90 years of history already to this historic space, and this cannot be lost. The opportunities here are endless. What has happened to our heritage? Since when do you think the community has said that it was okay to start demolishing our past? We have over 3,000 objectors on the website for this development. Why do we want a city full of skyscrapers when it's marvellous Melbourne that people come to see? Our nooks and crannies, the hidden gems, the laneways, historic churches and parks make Melbourne, the city of Melbourne, a pretty good place to be. The Princess Mary Club is no exception to this. This historic Wesley complex is a Melbourne landmark. In 2007, the National Trust CEO said that the Princess Mary Club had a lot of social significance and that its loss would be a detriment to the history of the city. The Heritage Council says that Victoria has a proud legacy of heritage protection and that Victoria was the first state to enact heritage legislation. If this is the case, then why am I standing here today begging for your mercy to save this building? It has been registered as a heritage building since 2005 and it's been protected by the Heritage Act. But it hasn't been. It's suffered from years of negligence by the Wesley Church, who've basically let it run to ruin so that its plan of development can come to fruition. Heritage Victoria went to the effort of listing this in 2005 because it was worth saving then. So what's changed now? And they've done nothing for the past 10 years to protect this building. Windows have been left open, pigeons free to roam, and the roof not maintained to allow water direct access to the building.
Thank you. And now they say it can't be restored. Thank you, Sophie. Any questions for the speaker? On that note, I'll... Where am I? Call the councillor to move for motion. Councillor Main move. I'll second it. Councillor Main.
Thanks, Councillor Wong. Look, obviously this is a vexing issue. There's very strong opinions on both sides of the argument. I think the reason I'm prepared to support the opposite view is that there's been a lot of consultation with the applicant, and I think the Heritage Victoria position for me was the most important influencer on why this proposal should be supported. So once you take out our ability to object, if you like, to the demolition permit that Heritage Victoria has given, as Councillor Leppert established in his earlier question to Jane, it becomes a question of the overall site, and it's not a heritage question, it's just the overall site. And I agree with our submitter that at the moment it's an inhospitable dust bowl. And for 20 years this site has been run down, it's been an eyesore for Melbourne. And if you consider what you will get from this development, you'll get a new church-owned, publicly accessible open space, which this site has been identified in our open strategy as an opportunity to deliver that. So I think that's a major positive. And obviously you get a substantial seven-figure sinking fund to not allow what's happened to the Princess Mary Club to happen to the rest of the heritage buildings on the site and the risk of the church closing. I think that the setback conditions are appropriate, that the applicant needs some conditions to have 5 metre setbacks as we are proposing in the conditions. And obviously a 10 metre tower separation from Regency Tower is a sensitive point, and I know that many of our objectors are residents in that tower. This is an interesting example of a mixed-use city where we have so many dozens and dozens of new residential towers going up and so few new commercial proposals, so few. And this is an office precinct. And if we start saying we can't have a new A-grade office tower in a commercial precinct because of residential objection, I think that starts to send a message about that balance between who is the city for, the residents, or is it the traditional commercial heart of Melbourne? So I think for those reasons we should support it. Ultimately the Minister will make the decision. At the end of the day we're just effectively writing a letter to the Minister, who is the responsible authority. It's not actually within our powers, but obviously Heritage Victoria has been a very influential. Given the 20-year history, I'm not prepared to take a position that would potentially add more years to a bombsite site not being fixed. And that dusty car park at the moment really is just unacceptable. And here is a very specific proposal with a credible developer partnering up with a church which is clearly enthusiastic about the proposal. And with all those factors coming together, I think that this proposal deserves support, albeit with the caveat that clearly there are some passionate views on heritage and there are some deep concerns by the residents in the Regency Towers. But councillors have to make difficult decisions, trade-off decisions, and in light of the professional officer advice, I'm going to support what the professional officers are saying.
Thank you, Councillor Main. Mr. Seconder, I'll just try to address a few points. Listening to all the objectors and understanding this question that's been put to councils and looking at the report in terms of what the key issues, objections are in terms of the heritage buildings, and I think that's been addressed and discussed. The impact on Jones Lane, which has since been upgraded by council and turned into a shared lane to try to improve the amenity of that place, because I have been walking in Jones Lane since 1979. At night, it's scary. It's still scary in many ways because there are sections of it that just look dark and dingy. Yes, it's the back of the Regency Tower and the back of the other building, which is a college. The fact that when I'm walking there, if I was to look up, I'll see the Regency Towers because it's been brought to my attention back in the early days when I first became a councillor that the other proposal by another developer on the other side. And I look up and I see that back in those days we actually approved buildings without setbacks all the way up. They do cause problems later on if the neighbouring sites or adjacent to neighbouring streets have a development proposal. We've seen it down in South Bank. We've seen it in parts of the city. We've seen it in Wheel Street, which BCAT told us we shouldn't have done it in the first place. But the point is that we try to see what's possible, irrespective of what's there, if they meet most of the planning or the planning requirements of the day. Podium and tower separation, and I think that's also been addressed, and I guess the key part here is the amenity impact on Regency Towers. Comments about a lot of tall towers. Well, back in those days, Regency Tower was probably the second tallest in that area, opposite 242 Exhibition Street, which is the Telstra's Black Tower. And we have seen more towers built in the city since, because as the city becomes more attractive to new residents, there's only one way to go, is to go up. But this is not even a residential building, it is a commercial building. The issues about, you know, the history of the site, and I think Heritage Victoria in its permit has made it clear that the history needs to be depicted in this redevelopment in a clear way to show what it's been used for. Many reports have said about the Princess Mary Club, like concrete cancer and others. And I think that if we were to leave it as it is, and it's got a big, huge scaffolding gantry on the front of it. And why do you think it's there? Because any day it could have fallen down and killed people on the road. We do not want that to happen either. So if the church, who's responsible for the site, says, look, we actually have $5 million of work we can't afford. So what do? We keep it as it is forever, unused, with an ugly-looking gantry on the front of the building so that it doesn't fall on people walking by. I think that's not a suitable outcome either. Now, the office has looked at this, and yes, and the inputs from Urban Design says we've got to set it back. So setting it back 5 metres, and the proponent has said, yes, we will work with officers to achieve that. And my recommendation, and you must work with officers to achieve that, because this is not a residential building, therefore you do not have to redesign the whole floor plate. It will reduce your yield. But the current plan shows that each floor plate is an empty floor plate. So the reduction from 2.5 on one side and from 4.5 on the other side to get to 5 means you have less yield. But you can achieve that. And I think the officers have done is a very considered and balanced, given the fact that Heritage Victoria has given a permit which clearly said that what demolition can be done, what needs to be preserved, and what needs to be done to show the church's steeple and also the manse, which resulted in the change in the design of the building. They cut it back and also lifted the undercroft, as Tristan has said. It's not a podium in some description, but it's an undercroft, and it's significantly lifted from the previous one, even though he didn't point it out in the photograph that the subsequent one at the back where the manse is significantly higher as it what it was before. So I think that, you know, when we see presentations there, let's be very clear and read the whole report. It is very clear what has changed, what has been done, what issues the council says in Jones Lane need to make it active, and now what we need to do to set it back. Because when you look at it from a planning perspective, yes, somebody will always get affected. No. This, every time a new building has been proposed in the city, others around it will be affected. But if we say that that becomes a mandatory no for everything, nothing will ever be built anymore. Ever. Because the planning scheme says that we have enough tower separation, treatments of building frontages, and this commercial building has all its services on the wall facing Regency Tower, so there's no direct overlooking. So the offices and the other commercial parts facing other directions. So when I look at all of that, and I think what's been proposed, it's reasonable. It's not what many of the objectors want to hear, but it is what we believe balances and ticks the boxes. So I'm happy to support this. Are there any other speakers to the motion? Councillor Wood.
I'll just keep very briefly, Chair. I think you've covered every aspect. Just to say that it would be very easy to with all the submitters in the room, and I thank you for your passionate submissions to sort of say, you know what, I'll just go with the popular side of things. But as the Chair said, we're here to make difficult decisions. And when you look at the open space, you look at the heritage, you look at the need to generate commercial activity in the city, I think that none of the sides will be perfectly happy with the outcomes, but that's what balance is all about.
Any speakers against the motion? Councillor Watts.
I've got quite a lot to say against this motion. From the outset, I have to say that for people who actually don't live in this precinct and who have no money of their own invested in it, it's easy to say, oh, well, this is a reasonable economic outcome. It's not. It's an overdevelopment of the site. There is some concern within the delegate's report, the urban design people compared to the planning people. And in this instance, planning is what we're about. But that doesn't justify, in my view, an acquiescence on our part, which is the way this particular motion is being expressed, as not objecting. We can actually still refuse and include some of the very sensible amelioration strategies that our officers have put together. And they've tried very hard to make this more acceptable. Sadly, it doesn't. It doesn't stack up still. It is an overdevelopment of the site. Now, there's talk about how wonderful it is that this development will deliver some money ongoing for the church to maintain the property. But you'd have to say that a lesser building may well do the same thing, but we'll never know because this is going for as much as it can. It seems to me to be some, and I am going to criticise the Wesley Church for allowing the Princess Mary Club to decline in this way and to have this $5 million issue around maintenance of the building. There are ways that churches manage this sort of thing elsewhere, and an overdevelopment of a site, despite the public space that it's going to develop, despite turning itself inside out in order to comply with Heritage Victoria conditions, despite all of that, it's just too much. Now, I would we have had other opportunities to refuse such overdevelopments, and we do so with conditions, and we could do so again. But I sense that there's no appetite for that amongst my colleagues, and that they are very keen. Or perhaps I misunderstand. We haven't had the vote yet. My sense is that there's quite an appetite to go with this, as oh, it's the best we can get on this site. I personally don't agree. So I won't be able to support this.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Further speakers support of the motion? Further speakers against the motion? Councillor Foster.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just speak briefly, given that Councillor Watts has so eloquently summed up so many of the arguments against the proposition. I can only add that it's a little bit hard, I think, for me to ignore what residents have been saying when we're talking about one of the most densely populated residential precincts in the CBD, and with three more 54-storey towers going up nearby. Once again, it's a little bit hard to ignore everything residents say on a proposition such as this. I do get a little bit tired of ignorance towards residents becoming a national sport, so I'm not going to join in on that. And I think it is appropriate to be considering those views a lot more loudly than what we normally do. I've got to emphasise, though, that this position isn't a no to redevelopment. It's simply a plea for appropriate development. And I think that's something that we have to remember too. It's not about never developing sites. It's about redeveloping them appropriately.
Thank you, Councillor Foster. Any further speakers? Lord Mayor?
Lord Mayor, I'm out of order.
Could
I say a few words?
Excuse me. Sorry, you can't do that, unfortunately.
I'm sorry, I don't
Please
think you can.
Take your seat so Lord Mayor can speak.
I don't think you can during debate, but if you want to ask a question or make a comment at the end, that's fine.
You can ask.
Ask a question at the end of our proceedings tonight. We provide a 15-minute slot then, if you're prepared to wait until then, but I'm sorry, our processes mean that during debate it's just us, so sorry about that. This is obviously a very difficult proposal for us. I don't think it's helpful to sort of set residence versus church versus developer versus density, or, you know, that's kind of adversarial politics, which is not particularly helpful and I think can be somewhat pandering. This is one of the few places where you can have an open debate about these things, where you can come along and you can stand up and you can put your view and you can get an honest hearing, and you do. And we do listen. And we listen to our officers as well. I understand the concerns that have been raised. I hear the frustration. Strangely enough, that means that because this is the forum in which that can happen, that frustration, which quite properly might be directed against Heritage Victoria or the Government of Victoria or the Minister for Planning, finds its expression here. That doesn't mean we can do anything about what Heritage Victoria has decided, no matter what we would or would not like if we had a clear run at this. We do not. I did listen very carefully, I think, to Sophie about her great-grandfather, and I don't know, you know, whether there is some condition around the deed of gift to the church of her great-grandfather. I would expect the church to honour that, as we do in foundations, of which I'm chair of too. I take up her point about social significance. It's a point we've made here, where in previous heritage applications we've applied, for instance, for interiors to be included. That was rejected. I'm not sure that history depiction is the same thing as recognising social significance, but that is, again, an argument to have with the National Trust, Heritage Victoria and the Government of Victoria, because we can't recognise that unilaterally. When they do make decisions, you get decisions like the Queen Vic, where a part of that old hospital was retained in a modern development and might not have suited all, but nevertheless went some way to recognising the social significance of what went before. So, and so far they've declined to act on that. So for me, it's a matter of balance. To do nothing, I don't think is acceptable. I take Councillor Main's point. For 20 years, this has been not an inviting sight and actually quite a threatening one. I don't accept, you know, I think the very well-meaning views of the Melbourne Heritage Action Group, who seem to argue each time, protect it all. Protect it all. You know, in some way. I don't know whether that can be done. I don't think it's possible on this site. So I think what we have before us, although we haven't had tonight arguments really about the inappropriateness of the massing of the building or the height in any degree which we would normally have for these sorts of objections, I think it has been clouded mostly by heritage, and that may or may not be fair, but that's what I've been listening to. So in the end, on balance, I'm going to support this application because it probably protects the best. Are we losing something that, in the best of worlds, we'd like to keep? Probably. But are we able to keep it in the world where we have to balance development to help us to support protecting the best? I don't think we can. And therefore, I think our officers have done a pretty remarkable job. And I support Councillor Ong's view about the setbacks from Lonsdale and Little Lonsdale. I think that would be a good outcome. But in the end, we're only a way station. In the end, the final decision is the minister's. And all of those elements, the government, the Heritage Victoria, are agencies where the minister can have effect and we can't. Like Councillor Main, once Heritage Victoria made their determination, it is very difficult to argue that I have a better perspective than the people who are set up to be expert in this area, whether we agree with them or not, and therefore I'll support the recommendation.
Are there further speakers to the motion? Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Chair. The Lord Mayor is quite right about this being the only open process and therefore a lot of expressions about dissatisfaction against Heritage Victoria and what the Minister ought to do are being expressed here because they can't be expressed elsewhere. Kind of like the idea that the Planning Minister could be subjected to the same difficult position that I'm currently feeling right now. I've certainly had quite a few positions that I've been thinking through over the course of the day. This is a very, very difficult decision. Others have expressed personal opinions that aren't related to matters in the scheme, so let me very briefly do that as well, and then I'll go back to my position. And that is that I think that Heritage Victoria absolutely got the decision wrong with the demolition of the Princess Mary Club. That the social and built heritage of that site is remarkable, and of course it shouldn't have been let to deteriorate to the extent that it has. However, under the scheme, and this is why it was the first question, so I could frame that debate right from the outset, under the heritage overlay 4301, it does clearly state that no permit is required to demolish the site, and that is because the state, that is because Heritage Victoria is the determining body for that, and the responsible authority, the minister, cannot even canvass issues of demolition of any of the buildings inside the site in his decision. Therefore, by extension, we cannot advocate to him that the Princess Mary Club be retained. I think that's utterly unfortunate, and I think that the Heritage Victoria decision should have been able to be appealed, but of course under the system that we've got, it is unable to be appealed. So we are in this lamentable position now where we need to assess the application before us with disregard to the fact that Heritage Victoria has now issued a permit for the demolition of the Princess Mary Club. We cannot canvass our opinions or our assessment on the appropriateness of the demolition of that building. Can I say on this building, though, that I do love this proposal compared to the 2009 version, particularly the wood underneath the glass tower is quite a remarkable improvement on what previous iterations of this scheme would have shown. There's a lot of open space here, but also quite rarely the quality of the semi-open space underneath the building is quite high compared to the sort of thing that we normally see, and I think that this is a vast improvement on the 2009 proposal. I think particularly the interface with Lonsdale Street is quite good. The major two issues, though, are very, very serious. The setbacks are inadequate. The property goes all the way from Lonsdale Street to Little Lonsdale Street. The proposed tower goes that full length. If any site can adhere to Clause 2201 of the Melbourne Planning Scheme, which suggests a 10-metre setback from streets, then a proposal on a site like this can do it. And yet there's only a 2.5-metre setback and a 4.5-metre setback, not a 10-metre setback. And our officers, I'm not sure why, I would have preferred it if they would have been much more ambitious with their suggested conditions, would have said, no, Clause 2201 says 10 metres, please go with 10 metres, but they haven't done that. Had they done that, I think I obviously would have had no reason but to support this, no cause but to support this. But on balance, and I really do emphasise that I have been flip-flopping all over the place throughout the day, I won't be supporting this now. Like previous speakers, this isn't about heritage. I've outlined why this isn't about heritage. This is about making sure that we do get a development that does comply with the planning scheme. The idea that we're setting a precedent where the setbacks from Lonsdale and Little Lonsdale are way less than we in our Melbourne planning scheme have suggested that it would be is not a precedent that I think we should go down the road of. As Councillor Wong has said, this isn't a residential floor plate, it's a commercial floor plate. The readjusting of the designs of the building is a relatively easy job compared to if it was a residential tower. And so I personally think that this application should be redrawn, come back with 10-metre setbacks, and then, of course, it should be supported. But that is such a distance away from what we've currently got that I don't think we should just tell the Minister that we should have a 10-metre setback. Obviously, my colleagues aren't going to be supporting that tonight, but I do think that's important. One final word about heritage, and that is that the Heritage Victoria considered the application under the heritage overlay. As submitters have said tonight, there are other heritage-related clauses in the Melbourne Planning Scheme, which, as far as I can tell, Heritage Victoria has disregarded. 3407 talks about the rhythm and the overbearing of adjacent heritage places, and certainly without a substantial setback, and by substantial I mean more than 5 metres, the proposal will be overbearing on Little Lonsdale Street, and it's actually the job of the responsible authority to assess that heritage question, regardless of whatever Heritage Victoria has said. So with that caveat, I think that there are two major reasons why this building should be improved. We should be in a position to improve it in future if those two things were ameliorated, but based on the motion before us at the moment, we don't go quite far enough. I wish it went a little bit further, and if it did, I'd be supporting it tonight.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. Any further speakers? 2 or 4 against? If not, I'll go back to the mover, Councillor Main.
Just some final points. I think that the top end of Lonsdale Street is primarily a commercial precinct in the CBD. It's very easy to talk about shouldn't have been allowed to run down the site, etc. I think anyone who's read the press on Acacia College and the fact that the church has been selling off dozens of sites. The facts clearly state here that it is a financial reality that the funds haven't been there, and this is the financial solution to have many, many millions of dollars invested in key heritage buildings. So I think, councillors, we shouldn't be voting against new open space and multi-million dollar investments in heritage buildings and a nice, new, attractive office tower in an office precinct. And I think the grounds for support are strong.
On that note, I'll put the item to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, Councillor Pinner-Mortimer, Councillor Ong, Councillor Mayne, Councillor Wood, Councillor Louis, all those against, Councillor Leppard, Councillor Foster and Councillor Watts, I declare it carried. Okay. Have a short break while we move to the next agenda item. Okay, let's proceed to the next agenda item, if I could. Meeting's resuming. Please take your seats for all of those who are attending the next item, which is agenda item 6.7, liquor referral, liquor. What is ENQ? LINQ-215-119. West Village NYC Shop TGO 531 Dukes Walk South Wharf. Right. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No? Okay. And then in that case, I'll move the recommendation on the screen. I'll ask the councillor to second the recommendation. Lord Mayor, I've read the submissions from the proponent and also seen the report and read through the details. We do have a condition here which both sides understand. I understand also the applicant is actually applying for a special license for New Year's Eve to go to 3 a.m. That's will be treated separately, but this whole area has only in the last 24 months been starting to develop more. Surrounding it are existing buildings, including residential, which, if I look at it from a change agent perspective, it will have some amenity impacts. The issue is then if one starts, as the officer says, it could be a flow on because I understand that whole area near the convention centre all the way in South Wharf, there are a number of venues which, given the opportunity, can choose to apply for the same and we might have a compounding problem in the future. So at this stage, I'm not confident enough to say yes to this, so I will go with what the officer has recommended. Lord Mayor.
I'm not averse to extending trading hours if there is a demonstrated track record that shows that that will not have an effect on amenity. And councillors will recall the very first one of these that we had as an application. I think we supported unanimously. It was a small bar in the city, I think a karaoke bar, that actually had the support of the police. There had been no complaints. It had been a great track record of being a good neighbour, and we were pleased to support that application. This is not the case with these premises. That's not to say in future, if they come back in a couple of years and they have demonstrated a track record of being a good neighbour, then we might consider it. But I think you have to have that track record in order to ask us for these sorts of extensions. Otherwise, I don't know on what basis we will make it in future as more and more of these come in. I'm not a proponent of the thin end of the wedge argument. That may or may not be true. All you can do is go on a case-by-case basis, which is what the new regulations say. And for me, it is there a track record of a satisfactory relationship and a harmonious relationship with their residential and commercial neighbours? In this case, there is not such a relationship. So I support the recommendation, which is not to support the application for a variation of the trading hours.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Any further speakers to this agenda item? For? Against? If not, we'll put it to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I declare the carried unanimously. For agenda six, item 6.8, I would like to declare a conflict, indirect conflict, in the fact that the donation was made by the applicant to the campaign of the team I belong to at the last election, 2012. And Councillor Deputy Chair, Councillor Leppard, will take over this agenda item.
Thank you, Chair. Agenda item 6.8, planning permit application TP 2014-1061, 146 Turek Road West, South Yarra. Would councillors like a presentation on this issue? No? In that case, we'll go straight to the submitters. I call on Tony Archibald, who requested the opportunity to address the committee. You have up to 3 minutes.
Hello, councillors. My family live at 144 Turek Road West, on the western boundary of the proposed new development. Every morning my wife or I walk into the bedroom of our primary school aged boys, open up the blind of the window in their room which faces east, and wake up the boys with natural light streaming in. Out of their window they can see greenery, Faulkner Park, and the steeple of Christchurch. If this development goes ahead, our boys will lose all natural light, there'll be no view out of that window, and they will look at a wall 3 metres from their window and be playing and waking in the dark. Our bathroom will be similarly affected, also losing all natural light. This is simply unfair. It removes a right to the quiet enjoyment of our home. At the ground level, the developers are using 75% of the available land for the building, when only 60% is recommended by council regulations. But from the first floor up, the building substantially overhangs the ground floor, using 85% of available land. My family and I live on the first floor of our building, so we will be facing a wall that extends from the street boundary to the rear boundary of the property. The developer should be required to adhere to the letter of the regulations, 60% usage, on the ground floor, and then maintain that footprint or less throughout all levels. Additionally, the developer and the council report has not accounted for the loss of ambient light that will be suffered because we no longer have any view of the sky. This plan creates an effect similar to the laneways in Melbourne, where there is very little light at the street level because the buildings are tall and spaced closely together. But this is a development in a residential area and not the CBD. The council's own urban design department considers that the proposal represents an overdevelopment. The following comments are quoted directly from section 13 of the delegated planning application report, urban design comments and recommendation. Predominant landscape character in the area is typified by sites with less than 50% site coverage. Established trees are significant components of the landscape character. The proposed site coverage is excessive and is a departure from the predominant landscape character of the immediate area. Development is overscaled and does not reflect the landscape character of the area. The proposed building does not allow for equitable development. They conclude with the following recommendations. Decreased site coverage, reduced building depth, appropriate setbacks from boundaries, and greater ground permeability and large canopy trees. As far as I can tell, these recommendations have been completely ignored by the author of the report. I would ask that the councillors also understand that this process is not occurring on a level playing field. This is a process that is heavily weighted in favour of a commercial developer. The developer stands to make millions in profits. They will spend hundreds of thousands on lawyers and engineers to ensure the best outcomes for themselves. On the other side, you have the existing residents who will live with the consequences of this development. Our properties will be worth less, and we have limited resources and only 14 days to prepare our objections. There is no neutral outcome here. If the developer loses, all they will lose is profit. If the existing residents lose, then real people will lose accessibility to their home, they will lose their enjoyment, natural light, privacy and the security and the value that they have every right to enjoy and expect.
Thank you, Tony. Are there any questions for Tony? Can I just ask a quick question of Jane in relation to that submission? Jane, do you have any response to that generally? But my specific question is particularly the slide that's on the screen suggests an oversight with the assessment in relation to the res code provisions, basically. Do you have a response to that specifically?
Yeah, just on that specific issue, the bathroom window actually can't be considered. That's not designated as a habitable room under res code, so loss of daylight to a bathroom is not something that we can actually take into account. In relation to the bedrooms, to the top of level two, in terms of the daylighting available to that window, the separation should be 3.9 metres, and this is in the, it's 3.8 metres, so there's about 100 mil discrepancy, which we would consider as reasonable in an established built-up environment. And at the top of level three, the setback to enable adequate light to that room should be in the order of 5.6 metres, and the setback's actually 6 metres. So we would say, in terms of res code compliance, it's an entirely reasonable response.
Thank you, Jane. Any other questions before we move on? No? Can I call on Simon Martin to address the committee?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Councillors, I'm here this evening on behalf of the body corporate at 1 Walsh Street, where a two-storey apartment building with a total of 8 units directly to the east of the subject site. It is important, I note from the outset, that the developer, Mr Michael Yates, has actually more recently purchased one of the units within the body corporate that I represent, so he clearly he won't be here. I won't be speaking on his behalf in terms of the concerns that we have with the project. I should also note from the outset that my clients recognise and accept that the subject site will be subject to redevelopment. Nonetheless, what the residents at 1 Wall Street have always sought is a new building which is respectful of the area and one which will not impact unreasonably on their amenity. And we say to you tonight that that is not achieved in the current design. We acknowledge that the changes have been made to the proposal since it was first lodged, including the removal of several 10-metre high boundary walls, which we suggest might have been an ambit claim in the first place. However, it remains a large and imposing four-storey building, 12 metres high, which is the maximum height allowed, extending for the entire length of the site and covering 75% of the land, or more so as described tonight. It will have a significant and deleterious effect on the residents at 1 Walsh Street, particularly those who share a direct abutment with the development site, and I quote directly from the officer's report, "The visual impact of the proposal as seen from the adjoining private open space at number 1 Walsh Street will be significant. This impact will be exacerbated by the fact that the ground level of this space is significantly lower than that of the boundary fence. The officer subsequently seeks to justify his recommendation by suggesting that the light courts that have been incorporated will moderate that impact, whereas we submit that a large proportion of the development remains within close proximity of our common boundary, which in many instances is only 1.8 metres away for three storeys in height. There is a plan that you would have electronically, but this is essentially the elevation that my clients need to look at each morning and each afternoon. This is the full length of the development and the full length of the adjoining site. Despite the inclusion of additional setbacks, it will still result in a canyon-like effect between the neighbouring properties. And it's not just my clients who are saying this, nor is it just the many of the objectors, 102 in total, but importantly as Council's own urban designers that are opposed to the project, and you've been quoted to them tonight. Compliance with res code side setbacks requirements is not the be-all and end-all. As stated in our original objection to Council, in this instance the setback distances should be the starting point, not just the bare minimum. When considered in isolation, the areas of non-compliance, such as the failure to provide adequate car parking and the overshadowing, which the officer acknowledges doesn't comply, they would in some cases not be fatal to the proposal. However, with their combined effect, we will see that there is a significant detriment to the residents of 1 Wall Street and to the broader area. Put simply, it's an overdevelopment of the site. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Simon?
Just just a quick one.
Lord Mayor has a question, then Councillor Mayne. Sorry, Simon. Sorry, Simon. Lord Mayor has a question, then Councillor Mayne. Thank you.
Sorry, I take it you want us to refuse this application?
Yes.
Are you aware that if we refuse this application, it will inevitably finish up in VCAT? I haven't heard an argument yet that this breaches res code, and what we're proposing are conditions which you may well lose at VCAT. Are you cognizant of, I mean, this is not where this is going to land. And I often ask this as objectors because they think the battle is over if we refuse the application. In the light of what our officers have recommended, in the light of the fact that it meets res code, if we refuse it, you will finish up in VCAT and you may finish up worse off because the conditions may not be imposed.
Firstly, as the officer identifies, there are aspects of the project that don't meet res code. If you're referring to the setback requirements...
It's so minimal, it doesn't seem to me to be... I haven't heard a material argument from you about how it breaches res code.
Well,
now, I'm not saying res code is perfect. No. I'm just saying they're the rules that you'll be judged by once you land in VCAT.
Well, the officer pointed out in his report it doesn't comply with the shadowing requirements. It exceeds the site coverage requirements. It's excessively having to be screened in order, and the amenity issues we've already raised.
My question is simple. As long I do not want you going into a process which you later regret because you did not understand the implications of what this report says and what will be tested in VCAT. Well, that's the thing I need to know from you as objectors.
Certainly the objectors are aware of that. They're also aware that VCAT doesn't always support a development that meets
B17
requirements.
No, absolutely.
And I know that the residents would be very keen to have council on their side.
Councillor Mayne.
Simon, the applicant has emailed today saying that the number of objections is down from 109 to 45 and that the condition 16.18, which refuses any residential permits to any of the buyers of the apartments, would also satisfy quite a few of the 45, particularly at 1 Walsh Street. Was the risk of residential permits for the buyers a serious concern, and is that a condition that you're happy with, that there will be no residential permits issued?
Certainly, through you, Chair, basically the issue of parking was never paramount to my clients at 1 Walsh Street. I know it was a concern to a number of other parties because they were aware that Council's position in terms of not issuing permits for visitor car parking. Our concern was twofold. One was the Port Cashier arrangement that introduced the need for two crossings in an area which the residents have put to me as a concern to them in terms of traffic movement and conflict. And another matter, to give them their dues, the applicant has resolved, which was regarding the location of a bus stop, not directly to do with car parking, but it was related in terms of the activity along the footpath area.
One more question from the Lord Mayor.
Ask one more, Simon.
Sir.
Given that there has been discussion even as recently as today, and I thank Councillor Mayne for referring to that email, and many of your residents wouldn't have yet seen that, do you think there is further room for discussion and mediation between the developer and residents, or do you think you're at a point where they would prefer a decision one way or another?
I can only speak on behalf of the group that I'm representing, which is just number 1 Walsh Street, so it's a question that could be put to the others. I suspect that, and as I tried to note, Lord Mayor, that the applicant has gone to some degree to meet with my group and to talk through the issue, so I don't want to disguise that fact. But equally, my clients were quite clear that the depth and the height of the built form in its solid form, the length of their property at 4 storeys is excessive. So there may be scope if the applicant were willing to set the top level further back or create a physical break within part of the built form. But that's certainly a question that, through you, Lord Mayor, I'd see put to the applicant as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Simon. I now call on Joanne Boyd to address the committee.
Hello, my name's Joanne Boyd and I live adjacent to the property. I live at 138 Toorak Road West, as did my neighbour Tony. So we live on the other side from 1 Walsh Street. 1 Walsh Street has got an issue indeed with the development for their side of the building, For us, that will mean that we will lose a lot of sunlight, we'll lose some of the amenity, we'll have an overlooking problem, we'll have a balcony looking at us. So there's a real amenities issue for us, because at the moment we are looking at some very nice trees, some cypress trees that have been there for probably nearly 100 years now. So we have one of the things that worries us about this development is that it means that all of the mature trees, all the mature plantings are to go. So we'll be losing that amenity, that sense of that history of the part of that part of South Yarra. Quite simply, which I've said again and again and again, and which I know a number of other people said, it's just an overdevelopment of that site. You're looking at 37 apartments. You're looking at a place that is not residential. The English Speakers Union is a funny little building where on Anzac Day the Navy veterans come. It is a public used one. The Jane Austen Society meets there, and so does the Shakespeare Society. There is plenty of backyard. There is a reason that you could perhaps keep the house, restore it, and stick something in the backyard that would be a bit more friendly towards its neighbours. And that's really what it's about. It's not friendly towards its neighbours. The parking issue, which has been canvassed and which is really concerned our particular block of flats and indeed the people in Marne Street, and it will affect all the people in Toorak Road West because of the business with the 120 Toorak Road West development, which we'll all remember, which is the crèche. But it's important to remember with the parking that we have two schools, the Christchurch Primary School and the South Yarra Primary School. We have Christchurch itself, the church, so that when there is parking problems, when there is a funeral, a big funeral, you can't park, and indeed with the weddings as well. So there is some issues about the parking, because in our block of flats, not everybody has a garage or a parking permit or a place to park their car. I acknowledge that there was some effort around that parking things, and that's great. We're glad that they've been listening and we've been banging on about it for so much. So finally, just again, it's just too big. 37 flats, it's going to affect, well, it's funny having just watched the Princess Mary thing, that's a really big overdevelopment. But we're a small beer, but it will affect directly at least 100 people. It is their homes. It is a residential area. We're very lucky to have Faulkner Park on the other side. I'll leave it there, but just to say there is some cultural heritage significance. I think the Queen's been there to the English Speakers Union, and I think Owen Dixon and Justice Stark and a few other judges as well.
Thank you, Joanne. Are there any questions for... yes. Are there any questions for Joanne?
I can put the same one to you that I put earlier to Simon. I mean, what you're asking us to do is to refuse this.
Yes, and I know that we will go to VCAT, and we're all looking forward to that like a hole in the head.
It's really a happy experience.
Yes, I know. I have actually worked at VCAT, so I understand completely.
It's all your fault then. The other point I would make, though, and I'd seek your response to this as well, I get the sense that... That's why I said about the conditions that are here. I get the sense that the officers have pushed this developer as far as the developer is prepared to go.
And you've watched over the period of the last 12 months it creeping backwards and things being made and changes being made, and we're all very happy that some of those changes are good. But there's still an overdevelopment issue. It is still big in bulk. It is still taller than the trees that are currently there. It will still overlook us. It will still create problems. I think my neighbours at 1 Wall Street are particularly disadvantaged, but I think we are also disadvantaged. My neighbours that live close.
Again, just let me point out to you, sorry to interrupt you, but I just need
that's
to be,
all right.
I mean, I'm always reluctant to send people into a process where it can be very brutal. I mean, yeah. part of the policy of this council is to allow 4 to 6 storey development along major transport arterials like Toorak Road. And this one meets that. In the eyes of the beholders who are nearby, yes, it's very, very large. Whether VCAT under res code will take the same view, I am personally very doubtful.
And
so it's with some trepidation I ask you, if you wish us to refuse this, are you prepared to risk the conditions in VCAT?
We will have to risk the conditions of VCAT. That's the way the system works, I'm afraid. So we prefer to have your support to say, no, there are still issues for this community and that neighbourhood about this development at this stage, and therefore it then goes to the next level or the next set of umpires.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne. Are there any other questions for Joanne?
Just one
No. We'll now move on then. Thank you, Joanne. You can take a seat. We'll move on to the debate proper, and I will move the motion that appears on the screen, and I call for a seconder. Thank you, Councillor Main. Just briefly in speaking to this, obviously the main contentious issues have already been raised during the submissions time and in questions from councillors. I think maybe we get 1 in 20, 1 in 30 planning applications before this committee which deal with res code directly. Most of the applications we deal with are CBD or South Bank towers, occasional Docklands tower, lots of towers. When we deal with a residential zone and res code, we have to really change gears and think very carefully about what we're approving here. Now, res code is very difficult the closer to the city you get. Res code is a one-size-fits-all set of provisions which apply to the state, and the higher the density, the more often you're going to have to really get your planning delegates to play a subjective game, a balancing game, and just try to come to the best outcome they possibly can. Res code wasn't designed with South Yarra in mind, let me put it that way, but Clause 55... must be applied to this application. Now, I agree with a previous comment by the Lord Mayor during question time that I think the officers have actually pushed the developer further than the developer wished to go. What is abundantly clear, though, is that a development of this height is going to be upheld by tribunal. I think that we cannot equivocate on that. We just have to accept that that will be inevitable. And so what we need to do is very, very carefully consider if there are other conditions that can be made to ameliorate the impacts of the development on neighbours, inadequate though the res code provisions can be. And in that sense, I think that the officers have done a very, very good job. There are obviously serious problems with a few amenity issues and overshadowing issues and overlooking issues with neighbouring properties. However, again, VCAT is not going to find is not going to conclude anything other than something either what we're going to be supporting here or worse, as the Lord Mayor's canvassed earlier. The two things I looked at very closely when I was looking at this application were the res code provisions and, of course, also the loss of trees, which is lamentable. Some of the conditions around those improve the status, improve what was proposed, of course, but I do think it's unfortunate that so many trees are going to be lost. However, again, I've really tested the provisions of the scheme to see what can be done to bolster this even further, and I don't think there is too much that can be done, so I do thank officers for going as far as they can again. And finally, it's been mentioned, of course, that 105 objectors to this application, and the majority of those objectors objected on the grounds of lack of parking in the immediate vicinity. Clause 18, condition 18, I beg your pardon, of the proposed recommendation here, says that we will amend our own internal policies relating to car parking so that no owners of any or occupiers of any of the properties in this development will be entitled to on-street parking. That's a very robust condition. I also don't want that one to be second-guessed by VCAT, by the way. And so I think that that will ameliorate many of the concerns, certainly not all of the concerns. So let me just conclude by saying that, yes, the concerns of especially the immediately neighbouring neighbours, I should say, are absolutely understandable and very real. Unfortunately, we're applying res code to this application, and on balance, let's not risk something worse at VCAT. I think we need to support this today. Councillor Main.
Thanks, Mr. Acting Chair. Look, I think this is a site with very good transport links. It's got good schools, it's got good infrastructure, it's got great public park nearby. It's where sensible infill development should occur, along transport corridors. I think the lack of residential permits is quite a big concession. I mean, South Yarra already has a beneficial arrangement when compared with Parkville or North Melbourne, where the residents there, the long-serving residents, have two permits per house versus one in the northern part of the municipality. And this proposal obviously grandfathers that benefit and doesn't allow any of the 37 new apartments access to that benefit. So it's quite a favourable protection of an existing, arguably too generous benefit that the residents have in that vicinity. listening to the arguments, obviously no one can own views, is one of the principles in planning. And I did recently bump into a VCAT member at a planning event, and this member was complaining about some of our leafy suburbs constantly giving false hope to objectors by refusing the advice of their professional officers and endlessly going to VCAT and endlessly losing. And the comment was, you know, City of Melbourne doesn't, you know, damage its reputation amongst professional planners by getting into that game. So I look at this and I say, and we're going to join the objectors and spend $20,000 and get walloped by VCAT. Or are we going to respect our professional officers and support their professional advice after a good consultation process where there's clearly been movement and there has been appropriate conditions to deal with many of the concerns expressed by the objectors? So I'm not going to vote to give false hope to the objectors by creating the impression that things will be better at VCAT, when I think clearly they won't, and the words of that VCAT member are ringing in my ears about councils that do that. And when you throw in the money that you spend on that, the office of time you spend on that, I think we've just got to support a sensible proposal in an area where there should be a little bit more density along transport corridors, and we should support our professional officers on this application.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. Any other councillors speaking on this motion? For or against? Lord Mayor?
This has proved even more difficult for me than the last one. Someone's going to object to this, whether it's the residents or the developer. And I've come down in the end with some reluctance on the side of Councillor Mayne and Councillor Leppett. This development, I have no doubt, pushes even the res code envelope, and Councillor Leppett outlined the shortcomings of that code the closer we get to the city. Realistically, our support or otherwise is going to mean nothing at VCAT without grounds provided by our officers, and they haven't been provided. In fact, quite the opposite has been done through the conditions. And had those parking conditions not been met, I probably would have come down on the other side. I hear the concerns of residents about the massing of the building, the site coverage, the loss of amenity, and had I determined to go the other way, they would have been the grounds I suggested. But I am not convinced. I'm not convinced. I don't try to second-guess VCAT, but that they will be persuasive at VCAT. And therefore, I echo Councillor Mayne. But it's with no great pleasure. I understand the concerns of the 102 objectors. We're now told down to 45. For me, it is the parking conditions, as Councillor Mayne said. It's very hard now, I think, for us to resolve to refuse this on the basis of the advice of our professional officers.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Any other councillors wish to speak on this debate? Councillor Pinder-Mortimer.
I just need to say that I'm torn, but I think Councillor Mayne has very clearly changed my mind as well, in that I just can't see a way that you could, you know, go through this and through with VCAT and come out successfully. So for that, and I think the officers have done a great job in how they've approached this. So much as I'm torn, I do go with Lord Mayor and Councillor Mayne.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other councillors wish to speak in this debate? Councillor Watts.
I speak against it. I think that the Lord Mayor very clearly put to those who are with us tonight the risks that they incur going to VCAT, and I'm persuaded that we're dealing with an intelligent group of constituents who understand the risks and are saying, yes, we are prepared to do this, and I don't think that it's reasonable for us to prevent this. I agree with Councillor Mayne that we shouldn't get in the way of sensible developments. Obviously, sensible, respectful developments must occur, and this isn't one of them. It can be better than we have. Our officers have worked very hard, but it would appear that no doubt the constituents have read the conditions that are being imposed and they're not satisfied. And I'm going to respect what they're saying. And I'll be voting against this.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Any other councillors wish to speak on the motion? No, in which case I declare the debate closed and I'll put the motion to a vote. All those in favour? Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, Councillor Pinner-Mortimer, Councillor Levitt, Councillor Main and Councillor Louis. All those against? Councillor Foster, Councillor Watts, I declare the motion carried. Can Councillor Ong please be ushered back in? Thank you.
Back. The next item is agenda 6.9, which is the proposed discontinuance and sale of part of Block Pace in Melbourne.
Chair, could I declare a conflict of interest as Block Arcade has been a sponsor, has been an advertiser in my magazine?
Radio. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? Nope. In that case, I would call on the speakers to address the committee. The first one, I call on Mark Norton to address the committee. You have 3 minutes.
Chair and councillors, you should have a paper before you, which is an outline of what I want to put to you tonight. There's also a survey plan I suspect you got during the course of the day, which is on screen. There should be no dispute or disagreement about who owns Block Place. My client does. And to that extent, it's a bit unfortunate that the paper before you tonight uses language such as discontinuance, sale, transfer, because it's just not right. The deed of dedication, 1986, there's not much point in going into that in great detail with you tonight. It's about the right to pass and repass, a rite of passage, and really that's what occurred back in 1986 under the 1958 Local Government Act. What's occurred since roughly that time in 1986 is a progressive creep of chairs and the like into Block Place. You might know that my client purchased Block Arcade and Block Place some 18 months ago, and it's done a wonderful job, we say, in terms of the management of the facilities. This is a really important entry point to a vital part of the city. You've no doubt heard references to Golden Mile Trail, massive numbers of people who work through this space. We don't want tables and chairs to go. We just want to improve upon the management of it. That's not a criticism of management here, but as an example, your inspectors come see tables and chairs out in an area which they're not supposed to be, ask them to be moved, and they're back a very short time thereafter. We're there. Unfortunately, you're not. What we're saying is we can manage it. We want to put in place an arrangement with you to manage it. This is not about us making some commercial windfall outcome. If you've seen Block Arcade in the last 18 months, I think you'd agree with us what has been achieved in that space. We want, as I say, the chairs and tables to remain, but we've got to do it a better way than it's been done. So my proposition to you, it's in item 5 of the paper which preceded the survey plan you've got in for you, is that defer this, because it's not about a transfer, it's not about a discontinuance, it's not about a sale. Get some legal advice, please, about the propositions that I'm putting to you about exactly this. Get some external legal advice, I say, respectfully, Mr. Wood. Lead some discussions between us and the traders. We'll have discussions with you about how we think that management regime can work in a budgetary sense. And the final proposition I leave with you is that you will hear submissions shortly about rightly vested interests in terms of commercially vested interests. What we want instead is a better outcome for Block Place, a better outcome for your city, and we say respectfully we can do that under a change management regime. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. No questions for the speaker? Nope. You may take your seat. Next, I'd like to call on G. Theodoro to address the committee. You have 3 minutes. What's your first name?
My name is Jerry Walter.
Ah, okay.
Good evening. My name's Jeremy Wolveridge, and I'm here talking on behalf of Mrs. Theodoro, who is the owner of 28 to 32 Block Place. We object to the proposal of transfer of management control or discontinuance of Block Place to private enterprise, and I'm interested in the comments that have just been made in relation to the wording, and a lot of the concerns that we have are related to a lack of information that's been provided to date. We concur with the report of the City of Melbourne's Planning and Building Management in the agenda item key issue number 7, which states the proposal to transfer management authority over the northern section of Block Place would be contrary to Council's long-established strategy to enliven city lanes, as public spaces would clearly change the circumstances under which traders operate. Further, we make the following submissions in objection of the proposal. In addition to objecting to the transfer of management authority at the northern section of Block Place, we object to the same at the southern section of Block Place. Significant uncertainty surrounds the potential impacts of the proposed transfer of management, and I think further detail is sought. We further object to the proposal because of the potential and unknown increase in ongoing costs to tenants and to the property owner. We are concerned at the prospect of foot traffic becoming limited or reduced into Block Place under this proposal, and how it might detrimentally affect existing business conditions in Block Place. Thank you.
Have any questions? I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. The first speaker mentioned something about tables and chairs in Block Place, mm-hmm. which encroach over the lines of demarcation that's been set by council in terms of what street trading permits would allow. That's been an ongoing issue in that place. Will the traders along there start to look at the compliance issue a bit more, or prefer council to do more?
I can't speak on behalf of the traders. I'm here on behalf of one of the property owners.
Rightio. Thank you.
Okay.
Next speaker, I call on John Mihalidis to address the committee. You have 3 minutes.
My history with Block Place. My name is John Mihalidis. I'm the owner of Cafe Segovia and Cafe Biscotti in Block Place. I've owned Cafe Segovia for over 22 years and Cafe Biscotti for over 12 years. Cafe Segovia is one of the original cafes that started the city laneway culture. With the help of this council and all the tenants in Block Place, we've been able to turn Block Place into a city icon and a Victorian treasure. Due to Block Place's success, other laneways have been developed in the city, which have now given a distinct look and feel compared to other cities in Australia and even around the world. We are part of the Golden Mile, which is a tourist walking guide to discover Melbourne. We have people from all over the world walking the Golden Mile and enjoying the laneways of Melbourne and their atmosphere. We have also become one of the original non-smoking laneways in Melbourne. Another great initiative by this council for people to enjoy. People from all over Australia and tourists from all over the world enjoy and appreciate the laneways we bring to Melbourne. If you have travelled Qantas recently, you would have seen Block Place regularly advertised as a place to go in Melbourne in their in-flight magazine. Block Place has become a treasure to 4.5 million Victorians that are proud of their city and what it provides. As a tenant of 22 years, I'm struggling to understand what the motivation is for someone who doesn't have an invested interest in the properties of Block Place, also no invested interest in any of the businesses or tenants in the laneway. People want to sit in the laneway and enjoy the atmosphere. That is the whole idea of laneway culture. I've worked 22 years with my brothers and other tenants to build and create this culture in Block Place. The Melbourne City Council now has the opportunity to take ownership of this iconic laneway for their citizens to continue to enjoy into the future. This laneway belongs to the people of Melbourne. Thank you.
Before you take your seat, just ask a question, because the previous question which I asked now refers to the operators here in terms of the seating. Yes, City of Melbourne has a lot of seating. Will you be able to address the issue of tables and chairs crossing over the line?
We will now try to fix that. It's not a problem. Some people who sit down, they just move over. It's sort of sometimes it becomes a little bit uncontrolled because
when someone sits,
we just got to ask people to sit in.
Okay. So I've taken that word on that one. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
The last speaker on this agenda item is Travis Reed. I call Travis to address the committee. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name's Travis Reed from Spire Consultants. I'm here on behalf of the landowner of 25 to 34 Block Place and 317 to 321 Little Collins Street. And that land ownership is actually the private property which flanks the entire western section in the northern part of Block Place. So the previous gentleman that made a submission is a partner of my client and has been a tenant of his for some 22 years, along with the occupants and the tenants and the traders within the other five premises which sit within their property. I must say Mr. Norton has shed a lot of light on the real issue here. I don't want to go off script with the important submissions I want to make, but it seems to me in one respect what we've really isolated is an enforcement proceeding which needs to be more vigilantly managed by Melbourne City Council. However, doing that is not really about throwing the baby out with the bathwater and transferring management rights from the appropriate authority, which is council, to a private entity. It is about doing a better job of what council is entrusted to do, which is manage the location of tables and chairs. Having said that, let me get back to really what I'm here to say, is that the public's right to use and have carriageway through Block Place is protected through an existing carriageway easement which has existed across the northern part of Block Place since 1971. As everybody knows, no one's here to question the significance of Block Place as part of the quintessential Melbourne laneway culture. Our clients own the property actually since 1972. And in essence, the core of our submissions is that the public status and the enjoyment by the traders and the enjoyment by the Victorian public at large is under threat if we were to, in effect, privatise the laneway. There is real potential, in light of what the proponent has done with Block Arcade, to potentially restrict the ability of traders and the general public in terms of their hours of access. It may potentially prohibit the display of chairs and tables in the public laneway. It may potentially increase curbside trading fees that the traders must pay. All of these things will make the viability of our clients, businesses and tenants unviable, and it will also clearly erode the vitality of Block Place. I think it's the annual rates that our client pays to council, along with the traders, empowers council to manage and maintain Block Place. In 45 years, there's never been a complaint other than from the owner of Block Arcade in the last 12 months since they took occupation of that property. So I would say, really, that's not the real issue. And look, just really to conclude...
Travis, you have run out of time, Travis.
Yes.
But I'll ask a question of you.
Yes.
You represent the owner of the building on the corner of Block Place, Little Collins Street, separated by Balcombe to the what we call the Melbourne City Building.
Which they also own, sir.
That's correct, right. Now, in the building that's corner of Block Place, all the infrastructure there is part of the building, including the pipes and everything that's out in Block Place, which is in some state of deterioration too. Because one of the things here, I guess the question, and that's raised by Mark before, and raised by the Block Arcade Management Company on issues within Block Place, which could lead to us making a recommendation that says further investigation by management on looking at all the compliance issues, all the infrastructure issues, all the awnings that have been built and all that over the last 20 years or so, which could end up with some implications on all the traders in that. Because I think reading this and listening to that, there are a number of issues. Find the council not going to, if it doesn't go down the path of privatization, the management of the lane. But then there's also issues, a better or higher degree of management of this lane could result in a whole lot of consequences for both building owners, the tenants, and everyone else. Is that the thing that you think we should be heading down?
I think you've raised some important considerations which our client, as a landowner adjoining Block Place, is aware of. I would say that Block Place has one of many roles within this golden mile link between Flinders Street Station and Bourke Street Mall. Each of those sections of the pedestrian link has an entirely different character. De Grey's Lane, as we all know, has perhaps a character a little bit more akin to Block Place, whereas Royal Arcade and Block Arcade have their own distinct character. And there lies part of the charm of this internationally renowned laneway. I don't think we should make the mistake of attempting to homogenise Block Place to fall in line with perhaps what the applicant's preferences are from a cosmetic aesthetic perspective. I think the existing condition of Block Place is quite beautiful for all of its urbanity, for all of its, if you like, broken pipes. But equally, I was there this morning and it was buzzing with tourists, buzzing with local traders and business people and no doubt local residents. So I think further investigation of the condition, if you like, is appropriate. And my clients would absolutely welcome, transparent, on the front foot discussions. And you can imagine our surprise when we heard about this on the 19th of November, and here I am on their behalf making a submission, which, if it goes the wrong way, we could be looking at some pseudo-privatisation, which is dramatic language, but nonetheless that would be an error. And we would like to work with whoever council recommends we need to speak with to really identify issues that are real, to take advice from council officers who are the experts in terms of, well, what is Block Place and what role does it play in this golden mile, and make sure that, yes, the right physical improvements could be made.
Look, thank you for that. That's Lord Mayor. You have a question.
Can I ask you a question, please? Is your client also the owner of the City of Melbourne buildings on Little Collins Street, Balcombe Lane and Elizabeth Street?
Yes.
There's an old saying that when you come to equity, you have to come with clean hands. And what you're asking us to do in Block Place is what your client has steadfastly refused to do in Balcombe Place and with the City of Melbourne buildings.
And specifically, you're suggesting what about the property?
Well, I think it's very difficult to be credible if you come before us to argue that we treat Block Place in a certain way on behalf of your client, only when we have made representations to your client in exactly the manner you are arguing to us now about his ownership of Balcombe Place in the City of Melbourne buildings, that we are met with stony silence. So I find it very difficult to reconcile those positions.
Mr. Lord Mayor, with all due respect, I'm not across the issue or the correspondence between council and my client. That seems a valid observation, which I have no doubt my clients are here. The landowners are in the chamber tonight. I'm sure they'd be happy to speak with you and to take on whatever requests or recommendations or discussions you'd like to have with them. Nonetheless...
I would be delighted to do that.
Sure. They're just sitting over there and we can certainly have that conversation immediately following this. But I certainly compel the committee to keep a clear mind and think about what is best for Block Place, which is the subject of this item.
Thank you, Travis. You may take your seat.
Thank you.
Now, I would like to call on the... Sorry, what is your name? Yes, you may speak. I just want to double-check my paperwork. You are on the early list, but not on this part. Nick Zervos. Yes, you may speak.
Nick Zervos. I represent two of the traders in the street, which commonly known as Brown Sugar Cafe and Dinkum Pies. First, I must say at the beginning, you must distinguish the role of the trader to that of the landowner, number one. Number two, I think it's important that what we are talking about is not about ownership. Is about the management being taken away from council's hands to private hands. There is no guarantee that Block Arcade management will act in the interests that are consistent with council's own objectives, in particular when we talk about the fact that council is very prominent in promoting its laneways and arcades. It goes out of its way to make sure that the ethos of this city is preserved. I note that the main concern has been raised regarding the management with respect to the tables and chairs. You must understand that there are about 8 or 9 different occupiers that operate the tables and chairs, and there is the border, the bronze border that's embedded in the pavement in which the traders are required to comply with. I am not aware of any official complaint in recent years regarding the management of those tables and chairs. If you want to talk about management and control and you want to talk about the promotion of this city, it's clear that the management of Block Arcade does not have a consistent path that this council adopts. And the classic example is the White Night event. This year, under the new management of Block Arcade, they closed Block Arcade for that weekend, which had the substantial financial impact on each of the traders who were there to work towards promoting a Melbourne international event. I think it's important that the council maintains the cultural fabric of our laneways and arcades. I think it's important that council maintain the management. The traders are the ones that pay the rates. Not the landlord, with all due respect, but it's the traders that pay through their leasing. And it's they that will be dramatically impacted by a decision in order to, whereby there is a transfer of management. There is nothing stopping Block Arcade management installing a grill at the front of Little Collins Street to Block Place. The main entrance to Block Arcade is Elizabeth Street and Collins Street. What separates Block Place from Block Arcade is a very ugly eyesore. It's a garage grill. Now, if we're talking about beautifying our city, then the management has to be consistent with what they wish to achieve. I support the recommendation by your administration not to change the current arrangements.
Thank you, Mr. Zavos. On that note, I'll call on the councillor to move a resolution, to move the motion. Lord Mayor, I call the councillor to second it. Councillor Leppard.
Chair, can I just make one suggestion to the mover? Resolves onwards in the first clause is meant to be its own 10.1, and the other sections renumbered accordingly. The first clause, up, make resolves its own thing, its own paragraph. No, resolves is the first word of the next of the next paragraph. So undo that. Thank you. I'm sure the numbering can be fixed later, but yeah, that's. Thanks.
The mover happy with it? Thank you. Lord Mayor? Okay, now we've got that all numbered, sorted out. Lord Mayor, would you like to speak to it?
I think, again, this is difficult. This is, I suppose, a strict user versus strict ownership motion before us. This has been a very, very long time arrangement. I don't know if there is any such thing as sort of government adverse possession of land. I'm not suggesting that we own it if it's on title, but I am suggesting it's been used in certain ways for a very long time. I wouldn't like to see any constraint of the block place trading. I think I agree with all the arguments that are put forward. I move this in good faith, given the assurance by Mr. Reid that the owners of the City of Melbourne building and Balcombe Place will be prepared to enter discussions with us in the same spirit in which they ask us to consider their interest in block place.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Councillor Leppard, seconder.
I agree.
Further speakers to the motion? Any speakers for the motion? Councillor Pinner-Mortimer?
I will speak for the motion, but I need to say that after listening to the submitters, I'm fully aware of, in the last 16 months, the amount of work that's gone in to promote Block Arcade, thereby resulting in tremendous traffic and patronage of the restaurants in Block Place, as well as support for the traders in Block Arcade. I think Block Arcade management I know for a fact that the traffic has increased by well on 80-85%. The foot traffic has increased. And that certainly places the traders in a very good place in terms of reaping the benefits from that. Notwithstanding, I urge Block Arcade management to rethink this and to actually take on 10.2, I think it is, yes, 10.2, to see if further discussions can be held with owners and traders, and see where those discussions may take them, and then perhaps as 10.3 states to come back to a future Melbourne committee on completion of 10.2. So I'm supportive of this based on that condition, but also do recognise that a lot of effort has been gone in by Block Arcade management to ensure that the gateway to Block Place through Elizabeth and Collins Street does look quite magnificent and does bring in those additional traders, the patronage.
Thank you, Councillor. Minister Mortimer, further speakers to the motion, speakers against the motion. I'll speak to the motion with a few comments, and I thank, first of all, the various representations put forward and the submissions. I think there are two issues involved in this particular matter. Now, the first speaker talks about ownership and then talks about management of the laneway. And I think and a lot of the discussion seems to talk about management of the laneway rather than a discontinuance issue. So, and the Future Melbourne Committee, the 10.1, is also about the management of the laneway. City of Melbourne has this program that's been going for a number of years called Love Your Laneways. Look after the laneways, keep it because your businesses make money and profit out of those laneways. It also enhances the City of Melbourne's reputation as a city where the laneways is what interests people. So, and I also do go there quite a bit, and so do so many of my fellow councillors. You know, you go in there, you can have a piece of orange cake or coffee or hot chocolate. The point is, though, I chair disability for the City of Melbourne. Every time I walk through there, I look at the little metal rings on the ground, the middle ring and the two on the sides. And not once have I seen a chair or table within the rings. And that worries me. You know, when you look at it from a disability perspective, people who are impaired in wheelchairs, mechanized wheelchairs, manual wheelchairs, visually impaired, the way that tables and chairs are moved around, people turn their backs into the laneway, how does someone navigate that if they have some sort of age impairments or other disability? I think that's what traders need to look at. You don't want council to keep coming on and hassling you and issuing you warnings and infringement notices. I think that's one of the things that I think everyone needs to take certain responsibilities. Yes, there's a complaint that City of Melbourne, as the first speaker says, oh, we're not there all the time, and therefore it's not been properly looked after. Well, that's something that should be brought to the City of Melbourne's attention and says, what else can be done to improve the management? But to change all of it wholesale without further investigation, I think it's very tricky. The second part, 10.2, it's almost a no-brainer because it's within the block arcade. But what's this particular item that has really been unfortunate? It's created a block arcade versus block place argument. It shouldn't, because on one hand, they are symbiotic. The success of block arcade also means the success of block place, and vice versa. People coming in from Collins Street, Elizabeth Street will go through the other way. People coming from the other way comes in there to the what they call Hopton Tea Rooms and the other businesses within that. So let's hope that we can put this aside and look at how we manage it better, because listening to all of that, everybody wants this to work. So let's try to do that. And I support this because I think the management part of the northern side of Block Place, let's put it aside. Let's work together on that. The southern part is almost a no-brainer. It's within Block Arcade. Let's make that better too. So thank everyone. Not an easy one, but I think we have to move forward carefully. And as I said, I walk a lot. And Balcombe Place, which is not really part of this discussion, but next door, I also am responsible for the city on waste management. And that is one of our nominated compactor site. One day, we might look at trying to improve the management of that lane, Balcombe Place, a bit better. I've been told by engineering it's no longer a nominated compactor site because we failed to negotiate that in the past. All right, thank you. I'll go back to the speaker to move it no more. Then I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I declare it carried unanimously. And now I return this to the Lord Mayor Robert Doyle to chair the remainder of the meeting.
There are two items of general business to be considered. The first is agenda item 7.1, the notice of motion standing in Councillor Leppert's name on South Kensington Station, and I ask him to move that notice of motion in his name.
So moved.
I'm happy to second that, Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Can I ask, I haven't actually foreshadowed this, so the answer might be no, but if it's available, can we just put the notice on the screen and scroll down to the map? If that's not possible, fine. I'll just play on. No, that's fine. I was just wondering if it might be. The last few agenda items have been quite difficult for many of us. I'm hoping this one can be very easy. South Kensington Station at the moment is unsafe, it's dingy, and it puts people off public transport, and that's pretty black and white situation. It needs to be fixed. Certainly the safety issue is probably the most difficult issue in terms of the current arrangements. I know many, many people who live in Kensington Banks who will not walk to South Kensington Station after dark. They will go to Kensington Station or they will take alternative transport methods because of the both the perception and the reality of a lack of safety at South Kensington Station, which is an incredibly poorly designed station in terms of safety. Now, of course, at the moment, the Melbourne Metro Rail Authority is planning the Melbourne Metro Rail route and the interface with the rail network to the west. And, of course, the portal is going to be coming out just below JJ Holland Park there. And so now is a perfect opportunity to seek to influence the public debate a little bit. Until given instructions otherwise from the state government, we should all assume, of course, that the Melbourne Metro Rail Authority will be doing its job, taking a narrowish point of view and not doing too much more than that unless they are told to investigate more than that. And so the initial stance of MMRA and, of course, the Transport Minister, the Public Transport Minister, is no, they're not really looking at this at the moment. That shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. I accept that that's the case. They're busy planning the business case and the design for Melbourne Metro Rail and they're trying to do the no broader a job than they need to when they do that. However, the logic here is actually quite overwhelming, I think. The catchments would be fairly spaced if the entrance was moved about 600 metres west. Currently, Kensington and South Kensington Station service a very similar area, and Kensington Banks is the worst serviced public transport area in the municipality. It, of course, has the 402 bus, but very little access to trams and poor access to the trains there. But earlier today, we considered the West Melbourne waterfront designs, which are going to bring in many, many new residents. So too to the north of the railway along Hobson's Road will there be many, many hundreds of new residents. And so we need to plan not just for current populations but for future populations. We are not the decision makers here. We cannot move the station, but we can influence the public debate. This isn't a debate that's really being had publicly at the moment. I wish that it would be, and I'm hoping that, and I'm not naive here, I'm not suggesting that we're going to be able to move the station by virtue of one little motion at an FMC meeting when everyone wants to go home. But I would like to influence the public debate as much as I possibly could, and so that is the purpose of the motion.
I concur.
Sounds like a good reason.
Is there a further contribution to debate? In that case, does the mover wish to conclude debate? I'll put the motion of those in favour. That is unanimous. Thank you. Agenda item 7.2 is a notice of motion from Councillor Mayne. Could I suggest that I defer this notice of motion? Councillor Mayne has had to leave for a family engagement, so it's probably appropriate to defer it until he has a chance to move it and speak to it. Happy to move that. Is there a seconder? Councillor Leppard. Oh, universally seconded. Let's put it to the vote. All those in favour? Carried. Thank you. Are there any matters of urgent business? We provide a period at the end of each meeting for public to ask questions. Are there any questions for us? Any of the staff like to ask us questions? In that case, could I thank members of the public, management, staff for their interest and attendance and declare the meeting closed at 8:17 p.m.